What's up, everybody? Welcome to Value Town episode 81. I'm Chanman V, and Fire Bat seems to be sneaking off the screen there. But we've got Fire Bat and Chalky here joining us. Obviously, Noxious Ray not here today, but these guys are subbing in, and it's going to be a very good time with you guys. How are you guys doing? You guys back from or recovered from Seed Story?
Doing okay, but recovering from Seed Story. I don't know. I haven't slept yet, really. Like, I took a nap in the middle of the day, and I don't know, my sleep schedule is, like, more messed up than it's ever been from traveling, which is strange, because you'd think I'd be used to it by now, but I don't know, I'm just a zombie.
Well, you've been in, like, all over the world now, like, in the span of how many weeks now? Three weeks or something like that? 4 weeks?
Yeah, been on every, like, continent except, like, Antarctica and Australia or whatever, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's pretty hard to get your sleeping corrected when you're traveling that much. How about you, Shaggy?
Yeah, I don't know. I've slept, like, probably less in the past 2 days than I slept in Europe. Like, I slept, like, 7 hours the past 2 days. So I guess I'm, like, my body's doing okay. I've been playing Hearthstone, grinding ladder, because I need to finish well for, like, last call standings. But, yeah, things are going pretty well. Obviously, I did terribly at Seed Story, but, hey, you got to lose some.
You gotta lose some. You gotta give the other guys a chance sometimes, right? I guess. But we're gonna talk about Seed Story, of course. Gonna talk about some decks just to give the lowdown, which is what we're gonna be doing today. And then we're gonna do another session of Mechatorps workshops. And a lot of you guys that watched last week really enjoyed it, so I figured we would do it again. Might not be something we do every single week, but it's definitely gonna be a regular segment. And for those of you wondering, what the heck is that? That's where we come up with our own cards that we think would, you know, fit in the meta or maybe conceptually would be a pretty cool thing. And at the end, we'll do some viewer Q&A, as always. So write in your questions or tweet them to me at ChanmanV, and I'll try to read as many as I can. So first thing, let's see. Let's talk about the big announcement tomorrow, right? We have that huge stream. The China Joy stream, it took me a while to figure out even what China Joy was originally. But I think Ben's going to be on there doing, I think, the typical thing. I wonder if Frodan's going to be, because usually it's like the Ben Frodan thing, right? When it comes to announcing these type of things. But what do you guys expect from tomorrow's announcement? Firebat?
I expect they're going to hype it up for a really, really long time, and then they're going to release, like, one card, and that's it, and then just leave us in the dry.
Oh, God,
like,
please.
That's usually what they do, right? They announce it, and they barely give us any content whatsoever, and they just tease us really hard. So I expect it to be something like that.
Oh, that was old guts. Holy crap.
We'll see 5 to 10 cards, right? Like, when they announce TGT.
Crazy. They're not going to be that nice to you, man.
That's like a quarter of the set right there. Like,
they did the TGT event, and they showed some cards there. Like, they did the show matches.
All right, but TGT cards were all terrible. So I guess they looked at that set. They made it. They looked at it, and they're like,
let's disappoint them early.
Yeah, just let them know what they're in for right at the gate. This is shameful.
So, well, we were oohing and awing. Come on, like when we were.
The one thing they always do is they show, like, the wacky cards first.
yes.
They always show. They never headline the reveal with, like, "Hey, here's Tunnel Trog, here's Totem Golem, baby." Yeah, actually, they did show Totem.
They did show both of those. Actually, Shaman was definitely in there.
They showed both of those cards, Jackie. This is a terrible example.
Well, they didn't show Tunnel Trog.
I think they did
show Tunnel Trog.
They did.
Totally.
Well, Tunnel Trog was part of Tunnel Trog was part of Eloy.
Oh, was it?
Okay. You're right.
All right.
You're right.
The guy slammed the Tuskar in the match, and fucking Totem Golem comes out, and everyone's like, what? Did that 3-2 just spawn a 3-4?
Somebody fixed that. Somebody totally fixed that.
I don't think they meant to show Totem Golem. It just happened off the Tuskar. But, I don't know. I think they're going to show... They'll show at least a couple cool cards. Like, you never, like, hook people on your set, and then you're like, "Oh, well, we've got nothing to show." And then I think they might do, like, the voting stuff.
No,
for
don't
stuff.
Yeah. Do the voting.
The voting was for expansions. But
yeah, I don't do the voting thing again, please.
It's just free social media interaction for them, but I don't know. They'll do something similar to that. They'll do some way of revealing cards. Like, they're not going to make it boring.
Yeah, I mean, but this is an expansion set, so there's, what, going to be like 40 cards? 50,
hopefully. 40, I like cards? The fact that they did 45 for LOE. Like, that seemed like a much better number than 30. 30 just seemed too little.
Oh, gosh, seriously. Yeah, 45. Hopefully they're as impactful as LOE was, too. It'd be hard to imagine. Like, the last two sets, they've literally had very good, you know, like, single cards where it's just you build decks around. And hopefully that trend continues. Given that it's probably going to be Karazhan, I mean, given that all these hints that they're giving at this point, I think really point our lead to Karazhan. Do you guys think that any kind of favoritism to Mage or anything like that we'll see in terms of what cards are released?
I mean, probably see like some cool Mage stuff.
I think Mage the one thing's for much, sure actually, last one. Is Shaman's not getting a lot. I mean, that's the
Shaman. Well, like they can. What they'll do is they'll give like very specific non-aggressive cards to Shaman, like
Urgle.
It's gonna be like this. it's gonna be like the building blocks where they start putting in cards that everybody looks at right now, and they're like, "Well, these are shitty." And maybe like a year and a half down the line, it's like, "Oh, Control Shaman is like really good now."
And they just or like start. They're gonna throw like a random tribe into Shaman, right? Because Shaman doesn't really have a tribe.
Yeah, and like these Murloc cards they keep adding, like
the
shitty.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that's
where everyone's like, "These are so awful," and they are awful. But like maybe a year from now, they're a real thing. Who knows? They'll probably give them like meme cards.
We just got a Murgle hero, so I figured they'd have to add some, right? Right. There's got to be some theme element to that. Okay, so Shaman getting nothing. All right, I think we can conclude that's probably going to happen.
Warrior should get nothing, too. I don't know.
Warrior should get nothing, too.
Yeah. It's got like, the most tier 1 decks that any class has ever had at
this
one time.
This is the highest.
Yep.
This is, I think, the highest single class representation on ladder ever. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's true or not. Maybe in Undertaker days, Hunter was more represented, but
there was Undertaker Zoo as well, and Undertaker Priest.
Mm-hmm. Well, and other decks were powerful and fun at the time. Like Miracle Rogue was still really good.
Yeah.
Well, Hunter
wasn't Undertaker Hunter though.
Well, I mean, the thing about Hunter during that time where it was dominating, it was just one type of Hunter. Man, with Warriors, we're seeing all kinds of Warriors on the ladder, and I mean, even just the chart, just the Arms Warrior, right? Just a super aggressive one. You don't see it much, but if you add that with C'thun and with Dragon and with just whatever, just your standard control.
Yeah, Warrior is golden. They literally can get zero cards and be completely viable, no matter what the other classes get. So
that's true.
I don't know. They need to be. The thing is, Warriors don't really use neutrals that well, though. So, like, they should be fine balancing this expansion. Like, they can easily tone down Warrior by giving other classes stuff.
Well, Warriors always had the base kit that's just, it's so control friendly, right? That you can always work in aggro pretty easily. Like, I think, except for if you're Priest. Priest is pretty hard to work it in right now. But, just generally with weapons and such, Warrior just has a base kit that's, like, so versatile that I think forever it will probably be one of the most versatile decks or classes that we have.
Yeah, it's got some of the best draw in the game. Mm-hmm. It's got some of the best removal in the game.
It's hero power is, fine, too.
Yeah.
The hero power is weak in the aggressive builds, and like Finley helps that out a lot, but I don't know. The fact that they always will have access to life gain for free means like it's always going to be one of the better control decks.
Yeah, for sure. So Mage, I mean, Mage didn't get that much, actually, in the last expansion. Or at least they didn't get that much that was interesting. Yogg isn't just for them. Yogg is obviously for.
Yeah.
I mean, people are using Yogg in every deck, like Druids and everything. So, specific to Mage, I felt like, they got some cards that kind of replaced some of the cards they lost. But generally, it's like Tempo Mage. It's like the Tempo Mage was around before that. And this one is probably still on the same power level as the old one was. So, what would you like to see from Mage? Like, is it possible? Is it? It's pretty hard to design wise, right? To do some different type of mage, because we have a combo one in the form of freeze, freeze mage, right? And then now we have like a tempo one. I mean, what other kind would you like to see?
Historically, there's always been, you know, that value mage slot, and we saw, you know, for little pockets in the meta where people were having some success with like the value, like arena Reno mage, where it's just like a bunch of mediocre value cards in Reno. So that sort of style, I guess, is probably going to be something that comes out if they add more mage cards, because it usually just finds a way towards the end of when there's more cards in the card pool, that usually that style of mage just comes out. So I'd expect to see that coming out again, but I don't know. Like, you can't really take mage in too many directions just because there's so many burn spells in it, right? You have like only those two real, those three, I guess, styles that you can really do with the classes currently set up.
You have all these frost cards, you know, like all these, you know, Shatter? I mean, there's some cards that we haven't even used yet. There's the 2/4 that freezes stuff, you know, and like that's basically the Flame Waker, the ice version of Flame Waker. I wonder if that's ever going to go somewhere, because that seems like building blocks for something just nobody ever uses right now.
I mean, you got to use a bad card to make a bad card okay, and that's just too bad.
I think it'd be kind of interesting.
That sounds like Secret Paladin talk right there.
I think it'd be interesting if they use like a little more identity for kind of the three classes of spells. So like Arcane, Frost, and Fire. Whereas right now, like, you just use them all, because why not? Like, it's like you put Frostbolt in, you put Fireball in, and as Tempo Mage, like, you put the Arcane spells in. It doesn't seem like they really have, they don't like have an identity as like, your deck is like an Arcane Mage deck. Like, there's Freeze Mage, but they use Fire too. Like, that's kind of like different than like the game or like how Warcraft kind of feels. Like, I don't know. Maybe they're okay with them using like all three elements at the same time, but like, I don't know. These kind of like concepts or things they actually consider when they make cards. I mean, a lot of people would just think, who cares? Like, I just want to play Hearthstone, but. I think it'd be interesting if they kind of, because like in World of Warcraft, one of like the themes of Arcane is that the more you cast Arcane stuff, the more powerful it gets. So like if you had a spell where like the more Arcane spells you've cast in a row without like breaking your combo or something, like it does more damage.
Oh, that'd be awesome, stuff, dude. Yeah.
Stuff like that. It's like really hard to phrase and stuff and fit that in a nice looking card, but it's sort of stuff that like you can consider and have fun with. That kind of like you can have like more of a theme to your deck where suddenly it's like, oh, do I put Frostbolt in my deck? Because like that would break my Arcane combo, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, just have a straight out, you know, different builds in terms of the different elements, right? I think that's a really good idea. I don't know why they haven't thought of that. Yeah, that would be awesome. Just so then we'd have different types of mages. We have Fire Mage, we have an Ice Mage, we have an Arcane Mage type of build.
I feel like Arcane is really what's like kind of lacking. Like, it doesn't have an identity right now in the game. Like, Fire is like your burn spells, Freeze has freeze effects, and Arcane's just like, well, it does stuff. It
draws
does
cards. Arcane.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, they all do their weird own thing.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Hopefully they catch on to that. That would be cool if, like, one whole set, all they came out with for Mage was Arcane spells or minions that benefit from Arcane, like a Trog style Arcane, you know, type of thing. Yeah, I think that'd be amazing. I guess we'll see what happens tomorrow. Obviously the dungeons will come out, and it's going to be one of these every week, once a week, you know, type of dungeons, I'm imagining. How soon do you think it'll be? Like, when they make an announcement, doesn't it usually come out like, at least with these dungeons, it usually comes out shortly after, right?
It's always weird with like tournaments if it's going to come out like in the middle of, because I've got like tournament after tournament in the next month.
Yeah.
Like week and after week. And
prelims is coming up soon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be like before that, right?
How did they get through all of the dungeons?
They can't get it out before that. So is it after that? Like,
it's either after prelims or we're doing prelims with half of the new cards.
I feel like
I wouldn't be surprised like if it was a little bit of
that. They could just like drop a bomb and like release it all at once.
What if they did? Guys, it goes live now.
It's really valuable. for them to have these new cards showcased at prelims. Like, that's really that's good,
true.
I think.
Yeah, that's true.
For the game.
Because, like, selling new cards. Nobody wants to watch the same meta that they've been watching for 3 months. Like, everybody wants the new stuff as soon as possible, and HCT is, like, Blizzard's big way to broadcast that and be like, look at our new stuff. Look at this awesome. Like, that would get viewership up. Like, because it'd be the first time players could showcase new decks. So I'd really like to see them, like, drop it right before prelims. But prelims for Europe is on, like, the 12th, which is really soon.
They could do it during prelims, right? Like, first wing comes out during, like, European prelims. Second wing comes out during North American prelims. And then
They come out on, like, Tuesdays. So it'd be on the 9th, the 16th. Yeah, I don't know.
It'd be a couple days before the weekend.
I think it'd be kind of cool if they just dropped it all. And I think the community would, like, there might be a really good reaction. But I also feel like from a financial point of view, like, it works out really well to space out your releases over a month.
For sure.
Because it makes the release, like, feel longer. So there's more hype for a longer period of time. And Twitch viewership just goes up more consistently rather than one big day. But I don't know. I mean, they release expansions all at once. And they used to... I guess they've always kind of done the wing thing for the adventures. I don't know.
I don't think the release of any of the adventure modes or even the expansions have really... I mean, they haven't really taken into account the competitive schedule in the past. Yeah, so
they have never cared.
I don't see it actually changing.
When it's like their direct event, though...
No, I mean
They've never...
If anything, they always favor releasing expansions right before
a whole series. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yes, it's like, I think that's, like, valuable for them to do.
Yeah.
Right, but it'd be weird to release one wing, because, like...
It's one wing per, like, per week.
Per week,
I really hate the week thing when it comes to conflicting with events. Because then
Just always busted at certain events.
Yeah, like Mage for Seat Story Cup, the one that JJ won, Mage had Forgotten Torch, and nobody else got their LOE toys yet. So, like, Mage was just good. Like, it just had Forgotten Torch for no reason. Freeze Mage was just really good at that event. And in the finals, Freeze Mage went 5-0 or whatever, like 4-0.
But it's more of snapshots of, you know what I mean? It's not like it's unfair.
It's snapshots of the week, which is, like, lame.
Yeah, but
then every week some card that has no counter to it yet because the other cards
exactly. OP, like,
and then everyone's got to
balance. Here's the thing: is like the team balances around the end product, not each week. Do you think they like care if one card's going to dominate for the week? No. So like. It seems shitty to have that be the case in a tournament, especially when it's one of the biggest tournaments of the year.
I mean, they could avoid it. I mean, they could have. I mean, this would be counter to what would be smart releasing, but just have lame cards. Just have lame cards in the first few releases, and then just in the final release have like all the super powerful meta changing cards, right? So that once those come out, then the whole set is done, right? I mean, that would be counter to what they probably want to do because they want to keep the hype going, right? So they have some kind of cool card in everyone.
They want to use their tournament as an advertising platform for their new cards,
which is
reasonable. But in doing so, they're just kind of being like, "Well, screw the competitive scene. We don't care about
that's
balance.
What we hate, guys.
So good luck, guys. Yeah. Have fun. You know you've been practicing all these decks for months, but screw you guys. We want to make money. GG.
It's like last year, right before Worlds, when they did the nerf patch, like all the players had already qualified for Worlds and they did it in like a very specific meta that they like proved themselves in and spent like 4 or 5 months practicing in and like gathering stats and building decks. And it's like, throw that all out the window because patrons out of here, boys. New meta. And like, Worlds was just completely different and sort of clown fiesta. Like, and you can make like, here's like what people would say. Cause I kind of was like pretty vocal about my dislike of that on Twitter last year. But, and the argument I got back from a lot of people, including some people at Blizzard, was just like, well, they're the best players in the game. They can like adapting as part of, being a great player.
Yeah.
But like, it's not really like the adapting part is like fun. Like I feel like the World Championship is the time to show who was the best players over the entire course of the year. Like, mm-hmm. who, given enough time and, like, all that, they played really well, they figured everything out, and they won. They came out on top. Whereas, like, yeah, the events right after expansions, you're going to see, like, deck building get rewarded really well. Like, obviously, the metagame at, like, DreamHack Austin, when I won, is nothing like it is today. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd never play those decks in a tournament today. But, right. I mean, it's like, adaptation has its place, but I feel like that's not the World Championship, especially when it was essentially mid-event the problem.
To be honest, the HCT...
The players that qualified for Top 16 were not playing on the same patch, which is weird. Like, don't do that. Please listen.
I mean, to your point, HCT has really never been about... I mean, to a degree, it has some deck building, right? Some people will bring, you know, just little wrinkles, but for the most part, right, our champions are just the people that do well are the folks that just execute well, just execute decks well, and maybe bring mm-hmm. their own lineup that just works out with their strategy. But yeah, for the most part, it's never really rewarded deck building, or at least, you know, deck building to its fullest. So it would be pretty weird to have it literally right before the championships, like we saw, you know, just have them, you know, be in that type of scenario. The reality is that's what it's always going to be. You know, like, yeah, I mean, we were just saying,
every
like,
time.
So yeah, far. I mean, the competitive scene is always going to take a backseat. So so we'll see what happens here. I mean, we're going to, you know, the players will just have to deal with it. And hopefully, well, by BlizzCon, we should be fine. I think we should.
That's the hope. I'd be really, really disappointed in Blizzard if they dropped like a balance patch before BlizzCon again. Oh, I'm okay them releasing content before, like, ideally in my perfect world, like, they release this expansion before prelims, mm-hmm. and prelims to the World Championship is played on the same exact patch. Perfect. Everything's okay. You get to advertise your new cards. It's a fresh meta. Everybody loves watching it because it's still being figured out. And then after Worlds, you like drop your new set or whatever. Yeah. Perfect. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. That doesn't seem wrong to me, but. The past 2 years, like Firebat said, I mean, kind of, you look at the tail of the tape, and they had a big balance patch before Top 16 in 2014. They had a big balance patch before Worlds in 2015, and it makes you worry for 2016.
Yep. Well, we're gonna have to see, and hopefully it'll work out. But again, guys, tomorrow, check out the stream. It's gonna be. What's the time on it tomorrow? I forget. Let me see what the exact time is on it.
Is it 8 on the West Coast, so 11 on the East Coast?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird time for folks here in the U.S., given that it's going to be on China Joy. But I don't expect it to be too long. It's probably going to be like an hour and a half, 2 hour type of stream. That's kind of what it's been in the past. But get ready to talk about it. I can't wait to, you know, literally talk, get a chance to talk about just everything that's coming out. Yeah, check it out. See what else this week in Hearthstone. Let's talk about our decks that we played this week. So this is kind of the portion of the show where we, you know, just talk about whatever decks. It could be a fun deck, could be a, you know, ladder deck. A couple of these decks that we're going to be talking about are top 10 legend decks. So why don't we start with Firebat? Let's talk about yours, since mine are not going to be top 10 decks here. We'll start with your Questing Rogue deck, which.
It's Chess Dudes.
Chess Dudes, yeah. Questing Adventure Rook. We've actually talked about this deck on the show before, and it was always from the standpoint of, yeah, this is kind of cool. This is, you know, obviously a cool wrinkle on Miracle, but, you know, it's more of a meme than it is anything else, you know. But what you guys, both of you guys who've been playing the deck, are telling me that it's becoming more than just a meme now, that it's actually legitimately good. So what's your take on this? And like, compare it to just some of the other Miracle decks and what it's better for and what it's worse against.
Well, one of the problems of Miracle Real Great is having a bunch of situational garbage in your hand, which can occasionally happen with Miracle Real, especially in matchups where you need to be fighting for the board constantly. So against things like Zoo, Druid, Dragon Warrior sort of stuff, like having Leeroy in those matchups is going to be, for the most part, not the greatest thing in the world to have. So instead of having that as your finisher, you have Questing Adventure as the finisher, which results in less burst. So it ruins your matchup against things like Reno Lock, makes it a little bit more awkward. Some of those matchups where you kind of really want the burst, or against like Nidzoth Paladin, I guess. I don't know. But these are the matchups that don't really happen all too often. So you're able to just then, you know, get in better board control. And a lot of times against a warrior, like the questing can do even more damage than Leroy would have done.
Hmm. Okay. Chalky, what's your take? I know you've been playing this deck too.
Yeah, I just played like 50 games of it in the past 2 days. Hit Legend today. I played 28 of the same cards in this. I don't have Journey Below or Shiv, but yeah, I mean, the things it's weaker against are just like board clears and decks like that just like Firebat said, control. Like if, because you don't actually have a way to make Cold Blood connect. Your best way is like Conceal, which is still weak to like Brawl. So Control Warrior is a lot tougher, but it's, you're still, I'd say, at an advantage just because you are Miracle Rogue. Like, it's still fine. Usually you still stick a stealth creature and Cold Blood it twice and kill them. But basically, questing is really good against, it's not insane against Zoo, but it's better than Leroy is kind of the thought there. It's really good against Shaman and Dragon Warrior, because if you can get it up to like 4 health, that's really awkward for those decks to deal with. And it's basically kind of like a second and third copy of Edwin Van Cleef in those matchups, which is like how you win against Shaman and how you win against Dragon Warrior is you just make a big guy on like turn 3 or 4 and they can't really do anything about it. And even if they can do something about it, it takes their whole turn, which is pretty much where you want to be. Like, as long as they're not hitting your face and you can get to an Auctioneer turn, you're pretty happy with life. I don't know. I'd have to check like how well the questing did overall for me, but it definitely won some games on its own. There were a couple spots where it's kind of like, yeah, if this was Leroy, I probably would have won.
There's always
like I lost to like Arena Lock. I lost to a Control Warrior because he brawled away my stealth questing adventurer. But
yeah,
I mean, overall, it felt pretty good. I noticed that, I mean, Chess Dude's top 10 with it for a second month in a row. And I was like, all right, it's time to learn some Rogue. I guess this deck's pretty okay. I played a bit with Amnesia, who was the one that made the deck originally. And it was pretty good, honestly. Like, I mean, it's not like the best deck in the game, but I'd say like if you want to play Rogue, this is certainly a good way to go about it. Okay. I think it's like maybe top 4 classes for ladder right now.
Maybe. It's like 4th or 5th, right? Yeah. Rogue is the class for ladder, 4th or 5th.
With what? Warrior? Like a Warrior Shaman?
You got Druid up there. You got Warrior up there. You got Warlock and Shaman, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Rogue Hunter? Or
I think my...
Hunter seems below Rogue.
Could you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. My audio on your end disconnected. And I don't know. Discord weird for me.
Yeah. So for those of you listening, just real quick rundown of the deck. It's a lot of the things that you expect from a Miracle Rogue with the backstabs, preps, Cold Bloods, Concealed, Death, a Deadly Poison, Blood Mage, Eviscerates, Sap Shiv, Edwin Fan. So the questing obviously is the big part. There's one Shadow Strike, SI Agents, Tomb Pillagers, Azure Drakes, and Gadgetzans. And then the Journey Below. So why the Journey Below versus, I don't know, just like another poison or anything like that?
So one of the big problems with like not running Leroy that you can get into is, like Chalky said, against the Control Warriors, where you just really struggle there. So you do oftentimes find you're able to stick a questing and still win, but you get the added percent of finding the 8-4 off Journey Below.
A never-ending.
A Nubarak.
And you win every control game if you hit a Nubarak. So you're towards anti-aggro.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's actually really high odds to hit a Nubarak.
Why not just add a Nubarak to your deck then?
Well, because Journey from Below is also then, you know, the third four drop, right? You only have 2 four drops, so like having the third four drops is pretty good. Okay. Increasing your odds of finding Tomb Pillager or having Zeril get thrown in there. So you're very likely to find Tomb Pillager or Zeril, and you have a decent chance in control matches just finding an Uber Egg and winning. So I really like Journey from Below. I think it's better than Poison.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't actually gotten a chance to play this yet. I definitely play Miracle Sun on the ladder, and the times I play it, I definitely, you know, winning percentage is 60, you know, 65% or something like that. And that's, you know, going from like rank 5 to Legend, just in that area right now. So, yeah, I'm going to try this out tonight for sure. All right, next. Yeah, actually, go ahead, Jackie.
Last. It's like, I think it's like maybe a 1 in 3 to get an Uberac off of it, or like any specific rogue death rattle. Yeah, because of like the way that the class specific cards work Discover.
It's heavier, really, right? Like higher priority. Yeah. Just
win against control if you get it too.
I ran it for
awesome,
a bit.
Dude. Nobody's running Silence. It's freaking amazing.
You just win. Yeah. 33% chance to win against any control deck is pretty good.
It's pretty awesome. Okay, let's talk about this Reno lock that I think it's Strife Crows. It's at least labeled Strife Crows.
Yeah, yeah. This is Strife Crows deck. You just got top 10 with it this morning.
Yeah, and it's a little bit different from, I guess, some of your other Reno locks. Well, this is more of a Nazoth version of Reno with a lot of the early pressure minions. So it's got like Argent Squires and Possessed Villagers. It's got the Ooze Peddler, Doomsayer, Sun Fury Protector, the Brands, the Demon Wrath. I'll just name a few more. I don't want to go through every single one.
You want to list off the?
I know. I'm almost listing off exactly it. Wait. There's not two Twilight Drakes, right? There's only one Twilight Drake. Yeah. But there is a Corrupted Healbot in this. Okay, that's a little bit different. He likes that card. Every time he plays a Nazoth deck, he plays that card. So that's pretty interesting. Thoughts on that card? I guess that seems to be the most interesting. That stands out.
By far the weakest card in the deck. So
okay. All right.
I'm not a fan of it at all.
Yeah, it's like the only 5-drop fills out the curve. You know, it increases some consistency on getting like a really big Nazoth, I guess. It's just like a big dude to try and slow down your opponent on turn 5, basically. So
yeah.
The thing is, like, there's so many like low curved cards in the deck. Like, mm-hmm. almost all of the defensive options are taken for one ofs, right? Like, so it's really hard to come up with like a better one of defensive card with, you know, there already being like, even like, you got Squire, which is pretty questionable.
Right.
You got like Squire, Possessed Villager, Power Overwhelming Soulfire. So there's like tons of defensive options already taken up. So at that point, it's like either Bane of Doom or Corrupted Healbot for like the defensive option there. And I think Healbot's maybe a little bit better than Bane of Doom because there's so many mid-rangey decks.
So you're talking 5-drop, just picking something for your 5-drop.
Something like defensive in general. Like
just defensive in general.
Any defensive card that costs at a low mana cost, right?
Okay. Yeah.
There's not much left,
that's true. We're talking about Reno decks. I mean, we're literally talking about 30 cards here, so.
But I've really enjoyed playing the deck list. I played it a bunch with Strife Crow, talking with him on call, and just like by myself this morning, and you beat Warrior every time still, even though you have like no rag or any of the like big top end, really. You still have, you know, Jiraxxus. So as soon as you play Jiraxxus against any control Warrior deck, you just grind them out and win very easily, especially if they're C'thun Warrior, because they don't have the ability to like kill you in one turn, generally speaking, for 15. And the Nazoth pulls enough weight as well. So you're just like, you don't really need as much top end as you traditionally needed in Reno, just because those two cards can carry so much on their own. So then you're able to just make it a lot more defensively, and all the defensive cards have been doing work. You've been improved win rates in like Zoo and Shaman, for example, and then still able to beat Warrior, and not really having any like lower win rates against any of the matchups that you'd think like you needed the top end in, right?
Right. So. Sounds pretty solid. It has weakness.
I like the concept of, you know, cutting top end and putting in the lower curve minions. It's just like, I'm not so convinced that these are all the best possible options for the deck.
Right.
Like the best possible early game solutions. It's kind of awkward because you run out of early game solutions just because you need to run one of. So there may be an opportunity for some like two ofs to wiggle in here or something like that. But
really? Okay.
Yeah, it was working for Strife Crow, though. He's able to get top 10, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, how much have you guys played with, like, Reno decks where that actually have, you know, just maybe a couple pairs or maybe one pair?
I've played two of Twilight Drakes before because that card's insane in Reno.
It is ridiculous.
Doomsayer before as, like, the only two of, because Doomsayer's insane on two in Reno Lock. So I think those are like the two cards that most people are their go-to potential, you know, like one caveat two ofs, but yeah. I've never had more than like one or two two ofs in any Reno lock deck. It's just you need to have Reno active on six or seven a lot of the time in some matchups. It's kind of
Shaman. Shaman. Yeah. Dragon Warrior. Yeah. It could be pretty rough.
You kill yourself a lot.
Yeah.
And they kill you a lot. And...
All right. Well, so my deck is very similar to a deck that I was going to talk about in Seed Story. So why don't we kind of combine those two? So Seed Story obviously was a really, really great tournament. I think everybody that was watching it, I think it got up to like 70 or 80,000, which for an event, you know, for a Hearthstone event, especially a non, you know, HCT, I guess Blizzard related event, even though the HCT events haven't got that much viewership today either. I think 80,000, it was really impressive. I mean, it just meant that they were doing something right. Teg was doing something right with that event. And, you know, I know as players have always loved that event. So, like, do you guys have a good time there?
Yeah.
It looked like a lot of fun. I mean, his new pad looks amazing, man. It's got the DDR. It's got the real DDR machine there. And
yeah, and, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Chalky, how's the bed over there, man? Is it good?
It was, I mean, I was sleeping on, like, a couch. But,
okay, all right.
I mean, the fact that we had nice little player lounge with couches was nice. Not many events you can get decent sleep at, but it was a fun event. I mean, the city it's in isn't really popping or anything, but the venue's nice.
Yeah, the venue is sweet. You got computers to play whatever you want. They bring in food every day.
Yeah.
There's drinks every day. There's like three refrigerators, a bunch of drinks in them usually. And yeah, they always go like the extra mile to like up from like other tournaments, just making the venue feel like, you know, at home and you're able to just have fun and do whatever. Because a lot of the times, like some of the tournaments, like as soon as you're out of the tournament or whatever, you just...
feels bad.
It feels bad, and you basically go to your hotel.
You're just sitting there, exactly.
There's nowhere. There's no player area. There's no nothing. It's like, well, see ya. And so I really like the atmosphere and everything in Seed Story Cup. It's really fun.
Yeah, and they always have these side events too, right? Like the whole Team Anubis thing with all these. I mean that part is actually even those little things, guys. I mean that's so perfect for the Hearthstone community. That's the kind of stuff that they definitely like to see in between matches and things like that. So
They just take that extra step with everything every time at Seed Story Cup, and just they always do one thing more than what everyone else is doing with their tournaments. So I really like it. They don't just settle for, you know, let's just run a Hearthstone tournament. They're just like, let's run a Hearthstone tournament, and then what else can we do?
Let's put some guy in a mask and like totally have a total voice manipulator, and that was awesome, man. On top of that, obviously the casting is always great. You know, having just a rotation of you guys on there, and a lot of times it's just like it can be a meme fest too. But that's exactly Skaka and Eloise and everybody together casting is pretty epic. But again, that's pretty much what we want as a community. So again, kudos to Take for that. But let's get talking about the actual play. So I think the deck that was talked about, at least for the first day or first 2 days, the most was Frodan, right? Frodan 3-0-ing Strifecrow and Oskaka with the PogChamp deck. And let's bring that up real quick, because this is the deck. I played a deck that's kind of similar to this. I've been playing this deck actually for a while, so I'll show you the PogChamp deck and I'll show you my deck. So the left one is actually Frodan's PogChamp deck, and it ended up being like a very much a fatigue deck, you know, in a lot of the matchups, or at least against a lot of the decks that were brought to the tournament. First off, like what are your thoughts? Just control, Shaman, and you know this type of model. Chalky, how do you start?
I think it definitely caught some people off guard. Like, one huge advantage it had in the first group stage is when you're looking at Shaman as, like, a ban, a lot of people were banning Shaman. Like, okay, so say you come into the event, you plan to ban Shaman. That means you probably have, like, Rogue, which does very well against this deck, and you ban it unintentionally. That didn't happen to Frodan, but I believe it happened to Gaara and it happened to Jackie Chan, who is playing a greedy shaman deck. Like, Life Coach banned his shaman because he's playing rogue. He's playing, like, greedy warrior, whereas those decks would have just absolutely crushed this, and he accidentally banned it because you don't know any better. We didn't have a list. Mm-hmm. So, like, you kind of get that small advantage, and then the people that don't ban it aren't prepared for it at all. They thought, you know, oh, it's aggro shaman. You know, I came prepared to beat aggro shaman. That happened to me. Like, I didn't know Gaara was playing this. I thought it was aggro shaman, and I ended up dropping two games to it, and then I was able to beat it. I think, you know, his draws were... I feel like this deck is so incredibly weak when you don't get Farsight on three against aggro. Like,
that's kind of what I played.
Destruction.
You just never have a swing turn. If you don't have Farsight on three, you never have a swing turn ever. Because, especially when you know they're playing this deck, you don't have to clear totems at all. Like, yeah, the totems do absolutely nothing.
They can be problematic at times, too, actually.
So you go face. Like,
yeah.
You go Flame Imp on one, they go totem. Your Flame Imp can just go face. Yeah. And then if they... You look at it like this deck plays on three. Mm-hmm. If you don't have exactly Farsight or, like, maybe Manatide, but you can see how Manatide is significantly worse than Farsight. Like, you get crushed, you get blown out, and that's what happened, like, in my set. It was like, okay, did you draw Farsight on three? Yes, you won that game. Did you not? No, you lost that game. Obviously, Frodan had heavily above average success in the first
group. He did. Yeah. He's getting minions. He's getting minions every time, and that's, like, the dream, dude.
Like, Earth Elemental Ancestral Spirit on four, I think, three times?
He was running hot. That's for dang sure.
So, obviously, it went way above average in the first group stage, and it was kind of favored to do so because of, like, the ban thing I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Once people kind of knew what it was, you have two options. It's like, okay, my lineup's bad against it, ban it, whatever. My lineup's good against it, leave it up, it usually loses. Like, if you're...
Yeah.
And that's what happened on day two. Like, this deck did not perform past day one, you know?
Cthune Warrior rocks it too. It just wins so easily against it.
Obviously, like, everybody was going off the rails about how awesome this deck was after day one. I mean, the Bog Creep was, like, a pretty funny card to see do.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, the Bog Creeper part of it can really be, like, many different cards.
Yeah.
And the deck still functions relatively the same. That's like the weaker slots in the deck. Like, that's like card 29 and 30, honestly. So
it's a flex position. Yeah.
I don't know. Obviously the deck's like, some people are like crying, like, you know, is this the new, like, tier one deck? Like, after day one.
No.
I mean, it's like, as a pro player, you test stuff like this and you always want to bring stuff like this and, like, surprise everybody and six-ho your group with it. It's like, that's the dream in your head. And yeah, occasionally that literally happens in real life. In this case, it did. But, like, I don't know. You look at what won the event, regular decks.
Yeah.
So it's like,
Chan got second, though.
No, Jackie had a couple. We're gonna see his decks.
He was the only one that played Control Shaman and made it to day three, right?
Yeah.
Because everyone else that brought the Control Shaman, they made it out of their first group. People figured out what it was. They adapted to it, and they all lost in the second group, right?
Yeah.
So basically, like, this deck has really... It has good matchups. Like, I mean, I don't want to, like, knock on it as, like, the worst thing ever. It's like, it's got a good match against Zoo, a good match against Aggro Shaman.
It just kills Aggro. Really easy.
And so, like, if you're expecting that, which you kind of are.
And Yogg-Druid. Those are the three most popular decks of the tournament,
actually,
right?
I've had mixed success against
Yogg-Druid. I don't know if it kills Yogg-Druid.
I've had mixed success against Yogg-Druid. It's pretty even, actually.
I mean, it's a fine deck. It's just like... you have to also fit it into your LHS lineup, which is, like, kind of a strategical thing, which is hard to do.
Yeah, true.
I mean, they did well with it overall, and, you know, props to them for finding something that did work. Even if, you know, they didn't win the whole tournament with it, it's definitely it performed well for most of them. I think Saiyan and Frodan did well with it, but
yeah, I mean, Frodan wanted to bring something different. He already said that, right? Like, going into
so.
Hey, mission accomplished. Yeah. Like, got people talking about stuff and if you could, you know,
from
go ahead, Chucky.
From a player point of view, it kind of, like, it's kind of shitty to see like people talking way more about like this kind of stuff than like the people that won the event or whoever wins. Like the life coach like thread has like half the comments of the bog creeper appreciation thread. Wow. And it's like, okay. I understand it's kind of like a light, it's kind of like a lighthearted atmosphere. And like, it's awesome to see new stuff do well, especially like with Frodan kind of coming in and people underestimate him and he shows up with this and crushes. But it's like, I don't know. It was kind of just like, I don't know how life coach feels. I mean, he probably doesn't care since he won.
It's one of those things where, I mean, don't get me. Okay. So first off, before I actually make the comment I'm about to make, I mean, life coach, you know, congratulations to him for winning the whole tournament. I mean, the series he and Tice had, it's probably the best series that I think a lot of people have seen, you know, this year. That tight, I mean, that series took like 2 hours to finish.
Yeah.
So it was a really intense match, and each of the games actually were very, very close. So, you know, I think the community does appreciate that. It's just, It happens so often now. I mean, those guys do really, really well. And I think when something new happens, you know, people, you know, in Reddit particularly, you know, go nuts about it. And that's kind of why we saw, you know, Frodan. Frodan 3-0-ing, come on, Shryko and Oskaka.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something to talk about. I mean, it's just like
6-0-ing with this deck was a pretty extraordinary event.
Yeah.
I will admit that, but, you know, it gets to a point where it's like, I definitely think it's more like impressive to, I think honestly, like Jackie Chan's performances with his deck was actually more impressive because he got obviously second place in the tournament.
Yeah. Let's talk about his decks. Let me bring his decks up real quick and we can talk about his.
His decks I'd say were
slightly
less wacky, but his shaman deck was pretty crazy.
Actually, I don't have his shaman deck here. Let me find it.
That's the coolest one.
I know, but he didn't put it in his tweet,
it's weird, man.
He didn't have his tweet. Like I gotta find his tweet.
I think Frodan's shaman deck is better overall, but
way better.
Yeah, Jackie Chan Shaman was not very
I love Jackie because Jackie does things that I do for fun, and he actually makes them work in a competitive atmosphere. So it's let me find it. I took the ones from his tweet, but I must have missed it. Hold on, I'm gonna have to find it here. Is it this one here?
It's got
rag in it, right?
Shamblers in it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is it. Okay, let me show you guys real quick. Yeah, the shamblers. I've tried the shamblers too, man. Like I was showing mine previously too, but by the way, I don't like the far sights either. I took those out in favor of another ancestral knowledge and an emperor instead. Let's see
it, I guess. But far sight's really good.
Yeah.
You Farsight a big minion and you Ancestral Spirit, and there's a lot of matchups you instantly win if you do that. And there's a lot of
you do, but a lot of times you get one of those two drops or you know those stupid spells that you like. That's what you end up Farsighting, and then it's just like, oh shit, that was terrible. So that's what I found. When you get a minion, it's like it's almost game over whenever you get a minion. But there are more spells in this deck, I think, than minions. We're pretty close, so it's like half and half with it. Anyways, yeah, I've actually put in Chromagus just for the hell of it too, just for ancestral type of synergy too, and that's been pretty good against control decks. Okay, let me get this Jackie Chan Shaman too. Okay, but anyways, in the meantime, let's talk about these four decks while I bring it up. The one that I think he's most known for, obviously, is the Druid deck. This one has the Onyxia in it, and that's about it, right? Like, everything else is pretty similar. The Soul of the Forest, Onyxia,
kind of what Jackie's been running for a while as far as Druid's concerned. He's always favored, you know, the double Wisps of the Old Gods instead of Ancient War builds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, kind of, if there's anything that you'd expect for Jackie Chan to be playing, it would have to be that deck.
Druid. Exactly.
Yeah,
he's been on the show talking about that deck too. The Warlock deck, is there anything? I mean, the Warlock deck has things like Sunwalker, and I remember thinking like, wow, okay, this is like a dragon Warlock that has, you know, just the extra taunts. And I mean, we saw something like this, man, a year ago, maybe a month, I don't know how long ago, but
yeah, it was a while. Dreamhack Summer, Xeris brought that deck after hitting rank 1 legend with it on like day 5 of the season.
Yeah.
He said the deck was good and brought it to DreamHack Summer and performed mediocrely with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
What do you guys think? I mean, as a tempo mage, is it better than running Tempo Warrior?
I mean, no warrior is like ridiculous, right? Like, yeah. In a five deck format, you find a way to not bring a warrior deck. Like, especially the fact that there's like six different archetypes you can bring. Like, one of them's got to be right, man.
I make spreadsheets about like win rates and looking at the matchups, and I use my own stats as well as Vicious Syndicate like ladder stats that are available out there. And it usually comes out to, if you look at like the top decks, just generally speaking, it's all like warrior.
Really good, and it is wrong to not have it. Like,
it's definitely wrong. All of the warrior decks are like, in a vacuum, they're all like 55% or so. They're all above average.
And I think Jackie Chan would even like admit, like, yeah, you know, it's probably wrong to not have warrior. Like, I think he would admit he's reducing his own chances. It's just, that's what he does.
It's for show.
He's not 100% playing to win the tournament, right? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't like spend every waking hour prepping for tournaments. This is like his first tournament. Like, he came and he played for fun and he did really well.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he doesn't get invited to tournaments either. So, I mean, this is like the first time he was invited, right? So.
Sure. Like, this is his first big invite.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got the Shaman up now. So why don't we talk about it? Pretty similar to Frodan's, in the form of a lot of just similar just spells and minions. The things that stand out, obviously, the Faceless Shambler. He has one less Faceless Manipulator because of it. And then
he didn't have a Bog Creeper. He had Frost Giants.
The two Frost Giants. Yeah. God, this is the man.
The Frost Giants were just terrible.
I
think I might have given him that idea like the one time he was on here, because I was playing Frost Giants at one point, and it was pretty bad eventually, because it only works against control versus control matchups, because you can't totem as nearly as much, right, against any kind of tempo or aggro decks. So a lot of times they ended up costing like I don't know, 7 or 8 mana, which is not the greatest place for it to be. It's good with Shambler, though, right? I mean, you can get a pretty good.
Yes. I don't know.
Come on. I mean, it can be good. I mean, the whole point is just to put up big taunts, right? That's the whole point of this deck.
It's just not very good. Like, the Frost Giants are, I mean, it's good against control, but, like, there's better options against control overall. How Life Coach brought Camel Hunter was just, like, if you really just want one specific deck to beat up control, like, this probably isn't even the right deck, because he had a match against, I don't remember who it was, but they were playing C'Thun Warrior, and it was Hopform, and Hopform misplayed at the end, but it was super close, and actually the C'Thun Warrior could have won the game.
I remember that. Yeah, Hopform threw that game. Yeah. He could have won in 15, but he messed up.
Yeah, all you have to do is hold the C'Thun. Like, you never play the C'Thun out.
The very last thing you play is C'Thun.
Like, you play C'Thun as they fatigue and you win.
Yeah, that's exactly how you win.
But, like, the fact that you get that close against, like, C'Thun Warrior is so weird. Because, like, in the past, you could just play really greedy decks like this and beat Control Warrior easily. Like, against C'Thun Warrior, you really can't do that. Like, they can still beat you. This deck has a lot less of a place, like, to be a thing.
Well, the C'Thun Warrior, the problem with C'Thun Warrior is that you can't quite, you're always scared of the removal, so you can't quite put, invest enough to kill C'Thun Warrior. So they get things like the Emperor down, like the Emperor with the 4/6s down. But then when they get Thorzan down and they save the coin, then Bran and C'Thun with the coin is just like GG, like no matter what you do as this shaman. And then the heals are just worthless. It's like my heals that I have, like the Hal Zeal and 2 heal waves or 1 heal wave, you just don't even use them. You use them on your minions so they don't get executed. So it's kind of crazy.
I kind of like the place that C'Thun Warrior is at, how you can't just, run a bunch of threats and just plow them over a lot of the times because they can outlast them. It actually makes, like, finishers a lot more of a thing. Instead of just jamming a bunch of random bombs, you need to use your axes and cards like that to actually close out games against Skithen Warrior, so it makes those cards a lot better in the game. So I really like the design of Skithen Warrior being like a control deck. It's like one of the staple real control decks.
So, yeah, I mean, Shaman deck, I think it like has a couple slightly unoptimized cards. The overall deck, like, yeah, it still has its good matchups. It's better against control than Frodan's, but it's pretty significantly worse against aggro. Like, Frost Giants, Rag, just don't do anything.
Well, you have you have to have a minion stick.
Did he really have one healing wave?
I know.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I can't believe it either, actually. Both those healing waves, I use both of them almost every game. So I can't even imagine living. But he has more minions too. Like, he definitely gets taunts up more often than not. He's got the 7/7s too, which Frodan's deck didn't have. Faceless is worthless if you don't get it. If you don't get anything,
I actually won in the game against Oskaka. The fact that he had Flame Wreath on 4 and he just used Ancestral Spirit on it.
Yeah,
and just it wasn't even the fact that the taunts won him the game against Worgen Warrior. He just beat him up too fast. Like,
yo, the Worgen. I mean, this deck kills the Worgen deck. Actually, it should be easy.
Yeah, it just has so much pressure so fast.
And it's taunt, too. Like, at the very end, you just throw up a taunt. And there's just, like, some taunt that they can't take out. So then you end up winning.
I remember when I was in the basement watching the games at Seed Story Cup, right? And it was JK versus... Or not JK. It was Oskaka versus Jaggy-chan. And the Fate to Karma guys were sitting next to me, and they see the first matchup come up, and it's the Shaman deck up against the Worgen Warrior, and they already started celebrating and freaking out, and they're like, Oskaka messed up. It's the only deck he has that can beat the Worgen Warrior. He gets a free win. He's going to win the series. So,
Yeah.
That series was Oskaka. Oskaka said he had a 0% chance of losing. Now, more realistically, that's probably like upwards of 80% of winning, but Oskaka was very favored in that series and like got unlucky on not only the first matchup, but like how things panned out.
Is it luck on the first matchup, though? Because Oskaka showed his confidence and basically set his confidence to Jackie Chan. And like, if you know Oskaka, he is going to queue up his best matchup first, especially when he's confident like that.
Is that true? I don't know.
He always does it against
That's a huge read.
Whenever he's confident, he will queue up his best matchup first. So I think he believes he can sweep with Worgen Warrior 80% of the time, is basically the statement he was saying. He's like, I'm just going to sweep with Worgen Warrior. I don't even need to do anything else. And I think I would 100%, like, I would gamble like a lot of money on saying that Oskaka would pick Worgen Warrior first.
Yeah, that's the difference between us. I think gambling on something that somebody first picks is a stupid gamble to take. But
I know Oskaka, and I knew like talking.
Jackie Chan doesn't.
This is like talking to a poker player that like goes by numbers.
Figure out that Oskaka was going to play Worgen Warrior first. I think he had a very good hunch that was going to
happen. I don't know. Once you like math out the potential openings, you can like find your best one, and like maybe they counter your best one, and you go a level deeper. At the end of the day, like, there's still Nash Equilibrium and stuff about it, but I mean, you're just saying, like, he might have had a read, which is, like, that's stuff you can't even, like, discuss. Like, how do you even, like, talk about a read? I don't know.
I mean, you have to come up with reads at some point.
Exactly. Like, I mean, this happens in poker all the time.
Oskaka definitely has like a pattern of whenever he's confident and he thinks he can 3-0, he tries to 3-0. He likes 3-0-ing. There's something satisfying about 3-0-ing, right? Don't you like the feeling of just being like, I 3-0'd him? You don't like that feeling?
So come in strong. You don't like 3-0-ing people? Come on. I mean,
a lot of people would prefer to 3-0 rather than take the highest win percentage route just because they want to try and get the 3-0.
I just want to win my match, man.
Yeah, really? Same here.
Well, I think
a lot of people are hungry for the 3-0. Like, they try and if they feel like they can 3-0 80% of the time, I feel like a lot of players would try and take that opportunity to 3-0.
If you think
that's
the deck's going to 3-0, it really doesn't matter where you queue it, though.
Exactly. That's why they queue it first. And then maybe it's not going to 3-0. Maybe there is some counterplay that your opponent has to it. Oskaka told him I'm going to 3-0 with you with Worgen Warrior 80% of the time. I win. I'm the best. What up? And then he's like, all right, he's probably going to queue Worgen Warrior first.
Let's play my Shaman like, deck that counters it, right?
Yeah, so, it counters it. Yeah. Right? So
that's what happened, right? So that's.
That happened. I don't know.
Man, next time Laskaka plays you, buddy, I promise you he won't.
All right, yeah, we got to make some.
I promise he will not be playing that.
I still don't think you can make a read on that situation.
I think you can make a read. I think the read is legit. I think, there is a little bit of that. And you know, you have to take a little bit of risks at times at some of these events, right? I mean, even playing just your highest, your kind of, versatile deck or the deck that you use to kind of throw out there, just get a feel for things, right? Is not necessarily the best thing either, right? Because you're trying to raise your percentage for your subsequent matches versus play the highest chance to win that first match, right? So it's just a different approach. Now, just 3-0-ing over winning overall, that's kind of weird. Like, just a player wanting to 3-0 more so than having a higher percent, like just a general win percentage. That seems kind of strange to me because, I mean, everybody just wants to win the most in the end, right? Not necessarily 3-0. You don't get bonus. You don't get bonus money for 3-0-ing people, you know?
How like, confident they are in their ability to 3-0, right?
Yeah, okay.
Confidence factor.
All right, but anyways, just to, I guess, wrap up Jackie's decks. Jackie finished second for those of you that didn't watch. And, you know, he it was like Yogg Druid again. It was Yogg Druid, this Dragon Warlock, standard Yogg Tempo Mage, and then a Nazoth Paladin, Control Paladin, as well as this crazy Faceless Shambler Frost Giant deck that we were talking about with the Shaman. Figured we would touch on Life Coach's decks real quick, just given that he won the tournament and all. Let me actually bring it up here. So Life Coach pretty much brought standard stuff, right?
I don't know if I'd say that. He didn't have Warlock, like.
Yeah, true.
They were standard lists for what they were, but their lineup was actually kind of interesting.
He did bring Hunter. So he brought Shaman, Druid, Warrior, Hunter, and Rogue. Shaman, you're what you would expect, mid-range Shaman. Druid is just that very popular token. You know, he didn't have Yogg at the end of his deck, so this is like your standard
Yogg
token.
And a Nourish, and then he removed a Raven Idol, and he had Sylvanas, which was strange.
Oh,
and
true, he did have Sylvanas, yeah.
Running Soul of the Forest over Roar, which after this tournament started becoming standard. Like every Soul of the Forest is like expected to be in Token Druid now.
Yeah.
Whenever I play against it after this tournament. Beforehand, there was like a toss-up between like Soul of the Forest, Roar, and I guess some other random cards. But now pretty much everyone's on the Soul of the Forest hype train. And
that's the dream, man. I think the community has been wanting Soul of the Forest to be something for the longest time. So I love that. I definitely love seeing some Soul of the Forest. So yeah, definitely some changes there with three or four cards that were pretty flavorful. Warrior, C'Thun Warrior. That C'Thun Warrior did well for him in the tournament. Hunter. So what did you guys think about Hunter? Like, we didn't see that many Hunters, right? Good time for Hunter right now in the meta?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's good against Warrior, and pretty much Warrior only out of the top four decks. This Hunter deck is bad against Druid. It's bad against Aggro Shaman, which he banned, and it's bad against Zoo. So, like,
how bad is it against Druid though? Like, how bad really?
It's all right. It doesn't even play Unleash, man.
Yeah, if you don't play Unleash,
that's rough. It's bad.
The Hunter in general, I don't think is that bad against Druid, but this Hunter deck in particular,
it does have two camels though, which is good against Druid. But
yeah, true.
I would say he added this Hunter literally just to kill their Warrior deck. So like, it was his fifth deck, which you only play in top eight and above, and it becomes best of seven. And like, past your top four decks, it's really hard to find like a fifth really good deck. Mm. I mean, I guess he could have added Zoo, but he was banning Shaman, which is one of Zoo's best matchups. So, like, that's where the lineup is weird. Like, I thought about doing a Shaman ban strategy and playing Rogue, but then, like, Zoo gets a lot worse. Your own Shaman kind of gets worse. Like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, it worked out really well for them. The Hunter, I don't think we really got to see the merits of that much. Like, it really didn't matter too much in his series. Like, the one series that came down to that was Tice versus Life Coach, and they had the same lineup. So it was like Hunter versus Hunter was a big deal, which is kind of like hard to debate whether Hunter was good because all it faced was itself. But yeah, I mean, the Hunter deck is just extremely greedy. I mean, no Unleash, no like anti-aggro stuff. It's just solely to beat control.
Yeah,
it's got double Camel. I'm surprised it only has one Cavaldier. Like, I don't know. I haven't tested Camel much because it's like Camel's like so suicidal to play on ladder.
it really is. So
like this is like something you have to test like just against people, because if you play this on ladder, you're gonna queue into too much Shaman and Zoo and
just lose.
I don't know.
They've been playing the Camel Hunter with 3-1 drops for a while. Like the whole G2 crew has been on Camel Hunter for forever. Yeah. And they've always had 3-1 drops.
It was their fifth deck, so like I think they all would agree like it's not insane or anything. It's like very specific, but
beating warriors huge. Just having a warrior beater, I think,
yeah,
is really
exactly
important.
And that's why a lot of people just ban warrior. Like that was their way of beating. But I don't know. The strategy was interesting. It certainly worked out, but I don't know. I mean, both him and Tice made top 8 with the strategy, and RDU went with his own strategy for the tournament, but he did bring the Hunter anyway. He was banning Zoo, and Tice and Life Coach were banning Shaman. It was kind of interesting that none of them landed on the Warrior ban plan. I don't know. The one thing was, like, Life Coach had to make his C'Thun Warrior really greedy because he left Warrior up, so you have to win the mirror, so you have to play Doom Caller, which is a really weak card, and you have to play, like, this weird into, list.
Yeah. He's got one Brawl.
He had one Brawl.
That's true.
That is, I don't know. I feel like his lineup's kind of, like, soft to certain stuff. Like, Rogue was actually his best counter to Zoo. The Skulker helps a lot in that
matchup.
Yeah,
Skulker was
like,
huge. The Argent
like, one Storm Mid Shaman.
Yeah,
Druid, one Brawl, like,
yeah.
It's a little scary to, like, think if his path to the finals was a little different, like...
If he starts versing, like, my group, every single player had Zoo.
He killed my Zoo.
In my group, yeah. We can see he got 3-0'd by Zalayan groups, because Zalay had
by
Zoo.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if he versus a group with two players with Zoo, you know, like...
It's just interesting to think, like... I think his path to the finals was, like, a little fortunate. Like, in the end, Jackie didn't have Zoo. Tice didn't have Zoo. I don't know if Eloise had or not. I would expect she did, but
it could have been
what happened.
It could have been their, you know, them anticipating that.
The Eloise match, I think, right? Like, it came down to that 50-50 duel.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
I feel like he actually got a little fortunate in how he ended up taking out some players' Zoos. Like, that's the greedy point of this lineup. Like, now every lineup has a weakness. It's just a matter of, like, picking what you want it to be. Some people pick, like, aggro shaman. Some people pick Zoo.
Yeah.
Some people pick warrior. Those people are insane. obviously, like, in hindsight, whenever you look at the winner of a tournament, there's going to be moments they were lucky.
Of course.
Like, when I won DreamHack Austin... I had to beat Rogue with Paladin. I had to, like, twice.
Those rags, man.
I beat Rogue
those
with
rags
Control
were amazing,
Warrior.
Too. Those rags, like, were pretty good, too.
It's just, like, you're always going to have moments of luck
because
you're not going to get there without it. But I don't know. Maybe the week to Zoo read was right for the event. Obviously, it worked out really well.
Yeah. If you look at all the Tier 1 decks, right, of the Tier 1 decks, which is the least consistent? It's definitely not Warrior. And I don't think it's Shaman that's the least consistent. It's got to be Zoo, right? That's the least consistent, like, top tier deck that you expect.
I don't know.
You can't really...
Consistency is such a meme word.
Yeah.
What?
You're just saying which is the worst.
It's the...
Yeah.
Because what is consistency? It's just the overall rate at which you win, right? It doesn't matter how you win.
Okay,
isn't
sure. It's another...
Win rate lower than Warrior and Shaman slightly, by like one.
It's consistent in its matchups, yeah.
So it's better. I mean, that's what you're saying. You just say better type of thing.
Well, there's
none of
like...
these are like the matchups for Zoo, though. So
there's like... There's like a theory where Druid can have two 50-50s. Another deck might have 100-0 and a 0-100. In theory, if you're facing the matchups the same, those decks are equally as powerful. It just feels like with Druid, like, you have it in your control because it's 50-50. But I don't know. Okay. Zoo dies. I hate like people saying like, yeah, the deck loses to itself. It's like every deck loses to itself.
The deck loses to itself. It's even against itself.
If there's a deck to make your lineup weak to, I think it might just be that Zoo's better to make your lineup weak to because you're going to get lucky more often than making your
That's just saying you think Zoo's the worst of the four, which I don't think is wrong, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like you're just saying it in a fancy way. I don't know. Sure.
Well, we're at a talk show, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sure. That's the whole point.
Yeah, I think, Life Coach is read with this lineup, especially the fact that he didn't bring Zoo. He is quite literally saying... Now, Life Coach also just... has some irrational hate of Zoo, but
he said that he doesn't think Zoo's good in this tournament. And all said, except
of course, you. But the fact that they don't bring Zoo and they don't ban it and their lineup's weak to it means they just think it's not that great right now, which is
fair.
Maybe right, maybe wrong.
It seems.
I think Zoo's been like for the four events that have happened.
I got to know about Zoo a lot.
I'm discounting HCT, but Zoo's. I mean, it won DreamHack. DreamHack again. It didn't win DreamHack Valencia, but that was kind of like, on paper, it was like better in the finals than the Nazoth Paladin guys lineup.
Worse, by the way. I'm talking like 1%.
Yeah, right. It's very low.
like the amount worse is like not
numbers
much.
We're playing around with in pro play is like, you know, maybe the best deck's 58, the next best is 56, and Zoo's like 54.
That's as big of the edge as you could possibly get in Hearthstone right now because the meta's.
Now, I think from Life Coach's point of view, like the way he plays the game and goes about things is like he focuses on playing his own decks really well, like a lot of the time, and it worked out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it worked out really well. Like he made, I only saw like one or two strict mistakes from him the whole weekend. He just plays very well overall.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays very well in unfavorable matchups, especially.
Yeah.
Knows what he needs to do. So.
What do you think?
I think he like played very well overall.
What do you think about this rogue? Just the whole Argent Squire thing. Like we've definitely been seeing that a little bit more in different variations again of Miracle Rogue. But this is the Leroy variant. So I guess there's one Violet Teacher in this deck and one Conceal in this deck. Anything about this flavor that you like compared to?
I like the Skulker for this tournament. I think Skulker was really well placed in the tournament. I think
Skulker. Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of Argent Squire. I think it's just so bad at the later stage of the game. People's argument is like, you can use it to combo stuff. Well, it's like, I can use any other card to combo stuff.
Any other minion,
if
right?
If I top deck Argent Squire at the later stage of the game, I can't cycle it with Gadget. It's such a dead draw that I don't know. I
have that package in my rogue deck right now. I think Argent Squire is actually better with Questings than it is Leroy because it buffs them really well. I don't know. It's been okay. I mean, the jury's still out on it, basically. It's like, I don't think even the G2 guys probably did enough testing to know if it's right or not. Like, it obviously did well for them in testing, but like, even when you test 50 straight games of something, like, and it does well, there's just a chance, like, you ran into the exact situations where it was good more often than you normally will.
Yeah, it's one card too. So how much is it going to influence?
Limits? Exactly.
You're looking again at 1% edges here. So it's like how many games do you need to test for to accurately figure out if you're increasing your win rate by 1%
or the Skulker like drops you like 1% across the board and increases your Zoo matchup significantly. So like. And I think that's really important looking at the rest of their lineup. Like, they really need to work on having a deck that should be Zoo. Remember, it's LHS. You can have, like, your one counter to it. It worked out really well. I've been testing it. It doesn't seem bad, obviously.
What everyone did against their lineup, too, is, like, a lot of the players that had Zoo were banning Warrior and bringing the Zoo.
Zoo players ban Warrior traditionally.
If you were to ban Rogue and bring Zoo, I think you'd have a better shot at winning, even though there's Baron Geddon.
I didn't know he had one Brawl, man.
Exactly. Nobody knows he has one Brawl.
I'd play Brawl.
Warrior runs one Brawl, dude. That's
almost never. If Life Coach full mulligans is Warrior against you and you're Zoo, like, do not respect anything. Just go face.
then you could win.
And you'll probably win.
Then you'll win. Yeah.
Screw trying to outthink the guy.
Like, I mean, he basically replaced one Brawl with a Baron, right? I mean, that's
one Brawl. With Baron. Yeah. He's got two Beckoner of Evils, but even then, Beckoner of Evils only like kind of mediocre against Zooks. A lot of times they can value trade it.
The best thing it does, honestly, is just proc your seven drops. Like,
yeah,
the two three body sucks.
Well, sometimes it sets up for Ghoul, but
yeah,
they abusive into it with their 1/1, and then you that sick Ghoul value.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, anyways, congratulations again to Life Coach. Obviously, did something right, given that he won, and he. I mean, he played. I thought he played really, really well the whole weekend. And yeah, just congratulations to him. And that G2 team is just like still super hot right now. Have they won the last how many events now? Have they won the last three events? Is that right?
There were some in between.
No, there might be some. They've each won one. Yeah, one major tournament this season. So that's definitely good stuff. Oh, one last thing. So the one play of the game, I guess the most entertaining play, at least for me, in the whole tournament, was when Naaman goes Astral Communion. When he innervated Astral Communion. Oh yeah, dude, that was good stuff. You guys would have Astral Communion, right? Or innervated Astral Communion.
I was asleep. Right? So
I would not have Astral Communion there.
Yeah.
Really?
No,
okay.
I wouldn't have. I don't know.
Would you have ever Astral Communion?
Those games.
So you just would never have Astral Communion then,
no.
Right?
No.
I think it's probably not great. Like, his hand kind of can support it. Do we have, like, the screenshot of his hand at the situation?
Dude, I don't have... let me see if... I don't have it off the top. It's going to take a little bit to find it. Maybe somebody in the chat can find it and maybe link it. That'd be great.
He had three mana, right? And he has Innervate, Wild Growth, Raven Idol in his hand. And he Raven Idols into...
I think he turned one Raven Idol'd, right?
And, turned one...
Yeah, turned one Raven Idol'd into Astral. Okay. And then he turned two Innervated into Astral.
Turned two Innervated into
Astral. But he lost an Onyxia.
He lost to Nyxia, and he had Wild Growth in his hand already. He had Wild Growth, Innervate. Like, if he top decks any, like, Azur Drake, Nourish already, he's in, like, a great spot to win the game without his hands panning out. He already has the ramp going forward. And even just, like, a minion, it's in a good situation for him. So, and then with Nyxia already, we didn't get to see the choices of his Raven Idol.
What was he against? What deck?
What was it against? It was against Jackie and
putting yourself on a single card a turn to win the game.
I can't even remember what he was playing against now.
I'm pretty sure it was the Druid Mirror, right?
Oh yeah, it was a Druid Mirror. It was a Druid.
Yeah, it's like you got Wild Growth innervated.
I would never take it then.
Yeah, Wild Growth innervated Druid Mirror, and we're gonna just throw it away.
No, it was Mage. It was Mage, guys.
Oh, Mage. Yeah, Mage. You're right. Okay.
I just remember Jackie's still on turn 5 and stuff.
Mage is the deck that if you're playing one card a turn, can definitely grind you out.
Yeah, Mage will literally just removes your stuff. I don't know.
He hit, like, Nourish off the top.
He had two Nourishes.
Oh,
my God.
Just refills his hand, wins the game. So, Life Coach,
crazy, man.
I was watching that in the basement with Life Coach and Tice while they were talking about their decks, and then everyone gets all hyped, so everyone's looking at it, and then Life Coach starts frantically doing the math about if it's right or wrong, and he concluded that it was incorrect to do it. He wrote it down on paper and did all the math.
Really?
And he was freaking out.
Incorrect.
How close was it?
It's simply incorrect. You never do this. And he was freaking out and waving his hands. He was amped about the situation. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I know it was incorrect by a large percent.
It was worth the entertainment factor, man.
Part of the cards, man.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. That's why they make the card. So it's for us to play them. But anyways, yeah, that was one of the highlights, at least for me. That was a lot of fun. Okay, well, that's going to be it for Seed Story. Why don't we do some Mechatorp Workshop, talk about some cards that we've come up ourselves. Pretty much me and Fireback came up with a few that we can check out here. Let's see. Why don't we start with a couple of mine? Mine are simpler than yours. Yours has a lot of text, so we'll save yours for the end because they're actually pretty cool concepts. So I came up with two. I made them Hunter cards, but this one's actually I wanted it to be Hunter, which is the Binding Shot. So this is a 2-mana spell that stuns the minions and the minions next to it. So kind of like a Cone of Cold. That's cheaper. It doesn't do any damage, but the whole point really was just to have you know, like a lot of stuff with Hunter is just about killing things, right? And there isn't much with stalling things. And I think Hunter has some cards that are, you know, whether they're good or not, yeah, I mean, obviously control. Yeah, control. But they, you know, there are things like Infest that we haven't gotten a chance to, you know, mess with because you just don't have time to even play those kind of cards, right? It's all about tempo. I think it'd be kind of cool to add some more cards just to you know, essentially freeze some of the minions on the board to give Hunter a shot at doing that.
Yeah. You give Hunter freeze, you know, they're just going to use it to protect their Wolf Rider. Like,
I know. Okay. In the back of my head, I do that.
Yeah, I know. A card freeze.
So, like, I go into this knowing that other things need to change too, but this is definitely, you know, at least.
I don't think this card would be like powerful or anything right now if you just threw it in.
No.
I think it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. It's more just a building block for, again, just this whole control hunter dream that we all have. But it, just the concept is just stalling because freezing trap is kind of the closest thing to that. But, you know, freezing trap doesn't actually freeze. Freezing trap actually just removes a card essentially a lot of times. So this is, you know, still keep the board the same. But, you know, maybe you can play Doom Callers a little bit or Doom Sayers a little bit more. And you know, some of the other things like that. right so that's my first one.
Call of the Wild's gonna be busted with Frost Nova Doom and Hunter.
Yes,
holy crap.
That's
it's kind of like a new take on like where they can go.
It's where they can go with Call of the Wild. I mean, double not, tracking 100% Hunter would be Tracking, Doomsayer, Binding Shot, Call of the Wild, Call of the Wild. Like, you just cycle your whole deck for Call of the Wild.
That deck would not be overpowered at all.
Every turn seven would be like Binding Shot, Doomsayer. You'd go off, you'd Call of the Wild.
There's counterplay to that.
There's definitely counterplay to that. Yeah.
Like, that's like saying that
like Mass Dispel,
Frost
dude.
Nova, Doom, and Alex every time.
No, you can't Mass Dispel yourself, I mean, right? You can't do that.
Freeze Mage doesn't have tracking. All card draw double tracking.
Yeah, tracking's really good. Yeah.
No tracking. You could definitely get the combo a lot. Now the question is whether, you know, you can do anything about it. I think Silence would just be played more, you know, just if
crazy. Juggler Unleash is really good, but like
it's not the same as Frost Nova Doom though.
Yeah, but you can't Crazed Alchemist and Knife Juggler.
You can only do three minions with this thing, too. You can only do three minions with this thing.
I'm playing the game that this wouldn't be so ridiculous to have it be a real thing. Like,
yeah.
I don't think this is imbalanced at all.
It would definitely make Freeze Hunter a thing, though. Like, Call of the Freeze Hunter.
Call of the Freeze Hunter.
Stop! No!
Binding of the Wild or something, yeah. Okay, the next one I have, and I couldn't decide what class to make this, actually. So, you know, class-wise, I mean, it's something we can discuss, but it's called Bleeding Shy, so I ended up making it, I think this is a Hunter border, I'm not sure. So it was meant to be a Hunter card, obviously, because it's called Bleeding Shot. But basically, they give a minion an effect that deals one damage at the end of every turn. So, you know, you could use it for yourself, like on things like Acolyte, maybe Enrage cards. Actually, it's not meant to be for Hunter, because Gazrilla would have been just too stupidly good. So, actually, Gazrilla doesn't even does it exist anymore? It doesn't.
It wouldn't be that broken. It's Gazrilla.
In Wild, you could play it. Right? Yeah, so I wasn't sure.
You could just kill it.
Yeah, I guess you could kill it. But anyways, yeah, the point of this is really just to put some kind of curse on a single card. And you could actually do it offensively too, right? Cast it on an enemy minion, just have it work down in that way. Or, you know, you could try to get somebody into fatigue by using it too. But it's like Pyro, but cheaper. You know, like Pyromancer type of effects, but cheaper and singular. So I thought that would be kind of an interesting type of card to add. You can make Patron something too, I think, on different decks.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Patron stuff. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like the wording doesn't need to be as complex as it can just be like Corruption, where it's like choose the minion at the end of each turn, it takes one damage.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not the most ridiculous thing. Like, yeah. I mean, I could see this like becoming a real card.
Yeah. It's like it seems mediocre though, because like you're never gonna want to use it for removal. Like, you're never gonna use it on something.
Yeah. Because
Definitely very situational in terms of that. Yeah. Very, very rarely would you use it against your enemy.
Yeah. This card would definitely just be like bad right now, but maybe could be synergy with it somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about a couple of Firebats here. All right, so Priest Guard, Power Word Fortitude. This is a 4-mana spell. It's an epic card. All of your minions have +1/+2 while on your side of the board. The buff is lost while attacking, though. So this is like purely a defensive type of buff or an aura type, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's...
Does this just last forever?
I mean,
just
this is only forever. For the... No, right? Right? It has to be just on the minions that live, right?
That's ridiculous.
Forever? That would just be ridiculous.
How?
Dude. Okay. That's like Mistcaller, like freestyle or something. This is...
Yeah. Yeah. Similar to Mistcaller.
Wow.
Mistcaller's not played right now. It's considered pretty terrible. But you lose it while trying to attack your opponent. So it's only when your opponents are attacking your minions.
I like that concept for sure. Just having something that buffs you on, you know, just one side of the turn. Man,
yeah, it is.
Forever?
But the thing with Priest Priest already really struggles to have a board, right? So, yeah. And you have to sink 4 mana, not developing your board at all.
I think you make this +2 health, and then you don't need the text about attacking, and it's just like a permanent buff of 2 health forever on all your guys.
That's a good point, too. It's just like an extra attack damage.
I think that card would be like pretty good, not overpowered, like. If you can like cast it, then it's insane value for the rest of the game. Like that card would be busted in Arena.
Yeah.
But, oh my god. Yeah.
But like totally. In Constructed, it'd be like, okay, yeah, you have to take the 4 mana to cast this, and then yeah, from then on, it's really good. But
it's like a wild growth. You need a long time
for it to be. I actually really like this concept now that you can like compare it to Wild Growth. Like, especially at 4 mana, like, you have to invest so much. And I'm speaking, like, as if it were just +2 health. I feel like the one attack doesn't. Also, just conceptually, Powered Fortitude just gives health, so.
Yeah, I never played WoW. I don't know. I just Googled the WoW spells.
Yeah. Okay, so basically, Powered Fortitude is just, I think it's just the AoE version of, like, it just gives your entire party a health buff.
Yeah, so, it's AoE powered shield. So
yeah.
I got it right. Yeah.
But so, I don't know how they. One thing that interests me is like how they would go about implementing entire game wide effects. Like, with Mistcaller, right? It's just like I think it has to be like
they can put auras on your hero.
Yeah, like, that's what it should be. It should be.
Oh yeah, they do.
Yeah,
but like, how do they like visualize that well though?
I mean,
they can make some sort of like sparkly lights go
on your hero
or something.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. It'd be the similar thing they do on the
something
minions
like that. Yeah. I mean, I think that's like, honestly, that's one of the challenges they probably are looking at before they create aura effects in the game. I like the concept of this card.
If we were to skip a turn as Priest on turn 4, essentially. Can we get enough minions on the board for this to actually...
You get to recover with Alkanai Circle, which is cute.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. It's like
3 health
and
Alkanai.
Then your Alkanai survives. Like,
yeah. So you got to go like Power Word Fortitude into Alkanai Circle.
You can Wild Pyro and it's a 3/4, so you can cast like 3 spells with it and it survives.
Wild Pyro is super dank all of a sudden.
Okay, I'm just imagining this card in Wild right now. Oh, God. Nazoth face is already disgusting. This card it'd just be disgusting. And Nazoth play, oh my god, that'd be
like crazy. There's actually counterplay to it. Like the counterplay is you just beat the shit out of them before they just can't cast this.
Yeah, and maybe we can finally silence heroes too. Yeah, that'd be.
But it's not even a legendary too, so you get it twice. So dirty.
Yeah.
4 health on all your minions.
Oh my god.
Well, they could make
play act right of pain.
They could make aura effects like unique.
Okay.
Where it's like you can run 2 of the card if you want, but it only applies once.
Yeah,
and then like Chan Man said, maybe you have a way to like disable it. Like maybe you can silence hero effects or like there's a new keyword for that or something. I don't know. I think this could be like a really cool like new theme. Like how they add like Discover, they've added Joust. Like this could be like a cool theme of an expansion is like hero buffs and cards that interact with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the 2 things I want to see the most from like new Hearthstone cards is just auras, because we don't have like very many auras like at all. Like we have them only attached to minions, so, like spell based auras that you can interact with that, and then also board space interactions because we don't have any cards that currently interact with board space. So I want to see those two things be implemented in the game because those are two just resources that both players have. That
auras traditionally, like in card games and in like in video games, even like in Pokemon, the card game and the video game, like your field spells or like the weather in the video game, like those dictated like entire strategies and like just made stuff cool. Like there's a Pokemon video game move where it's like it switches everything speed. So suddenly all the slow guys are really, really good.
Yeah.
So you'd base your entire team around that. And like that's the kind of like concepts where I think Blizzard really wants to print stuff like that, where it's like card makes you like reconsider everything, where you're just like, oh shit, like I could build an entire deck around this card. And like the other thing that they've constantly done is they want to make old cards that used to be bad, like into good cards, like with Seeker Paladin, stuff like that. And obviously, Seeker Paladin wasn't the greatest way to go about it, I think. It ended up just being a raw, like, this is a powerful guy, go.
Yeah.
My next card that I was thinking about is one that tries to make bad cards good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's look at that.
That's always, all right, so the next one we got is Ice Fury. And this is obviously mage card. What did that?
Shaman.
Ooh. Oh, it's the shaman card? Oh, and a shaman. Yeah, blue. Sorry, I was looking at the artwork. That's pretty cool artwork. Okay, so this is a 3-mana spell. Deal 3 damage to a minion and freeze it. Empowers your Frost Shock, making them deal 2 damage. Plus 2 damage.
Jeez. Malios would be really good with this card.
Oh my god, yes. Totally.
Holy shit.
That's cool, though.
You get Frost Shock.
I like the concept. This is similar to like what I was talking about with the Arcane Mage thing, where like spells empowering other spells, like...
And this is forever?
I don't know how they word it. Yeah, it's just forever.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. So at the end of it, if you play both your Ice Furies, you have to use them on minions, so you can't just like face shaman people with Ice Furies. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, the can only target minions in there, but then your Frost Shocks can deal 5 damage, so you can get like Malagos double Frost Shock to deal 20. And then Malagos freeze shaman.
We got the Malagos shaman back again, without ancestor.
That's the concept anyway. Without having to have ancestral call, right?
Yeah,
so then you can then power up the other cards.
Yeah. Okay.
Well. I think there's actually like in the game, there's actually something that sort of does this. Like the shamans have like the weapon effects, like Rockbiter weapon, Flame Tongue weapon, the Ice Brand weapon. I think is the ice one. And like they all empower your shocks.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like precedent there for this could be a real thing. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's more of these auras. I think auras is the next step that we could take in terms of design. Just some of the cards, new cards in the design. It's not too confusing. I hope that's not the reason why they're holding back on it. I think it's just another element you can add. I mean, I think...
probably is the reason why they're holding
back. So there's actually a lot of challenges they face, like UI wise, just like the confusing part, just like literal new players not understanding. Like they want to keep the game at like a somewhat baseline level where you can understand things very intuitively. And also, it's kind of like, you know, the more things like this exist, it's like, oh, I can't remember. Did my opponent cast an Ice Fury already? Do I have to play around 3 damage Frost Shocks?
It's kind of no different than having a secret to some extent, right? I mean, it's just like a little symbol that's up there.
Well, it's just like, how many of those things can you realistically add before the UI gets so cluttered? Like, there's not space for everything, right?
You can make the hero portrait, like, glow blue when you start charging up, like, stuff, and, like, maybe glow red when you start charging fire stuff.
Yeah.
But what happens when there's another card like Ice Fury and you cast both?
Then you're glowing red and blue. It's
how do you code that? How do you make that on, like, it's
just a rainbow.
It's like stuff like that is
shaman.
It's annoyances that they face when they want to create cool cards like this. I know because I like talk to the developers of cards and stuff. And it's not as like simple to just make badass stuff all the time. But
why does UI have to track all of that stuff though? Like, I don't know.
Because
it has. They don't track like C'Thun or Yogg. They could very easily do that.
That's
not too complicated for people.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I don't think it's too bad.
This is like no different than Roaring Torch, though, right? It doesn't track.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's reasonable. That's a real thing. I mean, I think it'd be interesting how they decided to go about implementing like this mechanic of empowering your other spells. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely a mechanic I really like, where you have more synergy in your deck. And kind of like the one thing I want to see synergy where it's like, not only does it make you consider playing maybe worse cards, but maybe it even makes you consider not playing good cards. Like with the arcane concept, like where suddenly you're thinking, do I even want like fireball in my mage deck? Whereas right now it's like, I'm making a mage deck. Fireballs, crossbows. Well,
it's one of those things where, I mean, you're classifying them as, you know, good or bad when they're, you know, when they're individual or they're in solidarity, right? But, you know, what we're talking about is just improving these cards by adding synergy and things like that. Yeah, so.
And, like,
it needs to be more synergy right now because every deck in Hearthstone right now is very cut. Like, these are the good cards.
The cards have no synergy. Like, the dragon
stuff is basically. Yeah.
Dragon decks and, like, Nazoth
basically,
and decks, only synergistic decks, really, besides, like, maybe beasts, I guess. But, like, for the most part, there's not very much synergy in Hearthstone. Generally, you just play the good cards. And it's been like that forever.
Things not, like, as dynamic as it can be. And, like, I think Worgenware is actually a decent example of, like, a good way of deck building where you ignore a lot of traditional good warrior cards. You just put in a bunch of, like, cycle and removal, and it works out because of this weird synergy with all the cards. They work well together. Whirlwind effects do really well together. Patron was a good example, too. Like, whereas Shaman is kind of just like, this does damage. This also does damage.
This is good value.
It's just really hard.
Yeah, it's just value after value after value, right? I mean, lots of decks being built that way.
The extreme way of looking at it is the fact that, like, right now, Aggro Shaman, you just throw in Thing from Below. Why not? That card's not an aggro card at all.
It's like, a taunt. It's supposed to be a defensive card, and you're just like, well, it's good.
You're telling me a 0-mana 5/5 is not an aggro card?
You barely totem in that deck at all.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't fit.
That's fair.
It's just a 4-mana 5/5.
It's probably a 4-mana or 5. Yeah.
It's a 4-mana 5/5, and Aggro Shaman just looks at that, and they think, good enough.
Yeah.
that's a shitty way. Like, that's kind of a problem right now with deck building.
That's true. Yeah.
And more cards will remedy that naturally, but.
Well, at least.
Also, we're at the lowest point of cards that we're going to be at for, like, the rest of the year, right? Because we're going to be adding a lot more cards to the card pool as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at least whenever things get retired, right? Like, the first season of every year, I think, will be
this, where there's not a lot of synergy.
Yeah.
It's kind of boring. But then as they add things onto it, it should hopefully encourage more synergies and be less boring.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then they have to start over again.
It's a challenge no matter how they cut it.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't we get some questions in here today? But before we do so, I just want to remind everybody that we have a Patreon for Valuetown. So for everybody that enjoys the show, wants to support the show, you can do that by going to Patreon and taking a look at some of the cool rewards. And, you know, if you want to, you can pledge and partake in some of those rewards and milestones. That helps us out and continuing to improve the show. I would like to give a shout out to a few of our patrons: Jacob Perez, Eric Lynn, Dustin DeMar, and Atomic Junkie. Thanks a lot for being. Actually, some of these guys have been longtime patrons, so huge thanks to those guys, as well as iTunes guys. A lot of folks listen to Valuetown on iTunes and Android podcasts. And one thing you can do to help out the show is to, if you enjoy the show, leave a nice review, 5-star review. And I'd like to, huge shout out to D Kibbs for the latest review. But let's take some questions. Let me see if I got some on Twitter here. I didn't get a chance to look. Let's see. Okay, so T. Jefferson asks, Life Coach won Seat Story without Yogg in any decks. Do you guys think the rage regarding Yogg's RNG previously was unfounded?
I personally rage against Yogg. I think it's very strong and can cause a lot of the previous things that have happened in the game to be completely irrelevant and just win you the game, which is not a feeling that I enjoy on the losing end. On the winning end of that feeling, fantastic, I love it. It's like, there's no way I can win the game. Yogg!
You just win, yes.
So, yeah. But the other end of it hurts. It's very soul-breaking, so... Yeah, here's the other end of it. That I think that Yogg in that Druid deck is still good. Like, even though Life Coach cut it from his build, I think he should have had Yogg in his deck. I think it would be better. I've played both lists. Like, I've played with Yogg, you know, like, maybe 500 games, and I've played without Yogg only about 100 games, if I'm honest. But I still, at the end of it, feel like Yogg was stronger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, like, you look one step down from where he's talking about, like he's saying, yeah, the winner had no Yoggs. I think everyone's overreacting. Second place had two Yoggs out of four and then five decks. And what happens if, you know, we were literally like game away, like quite literally it was 4-3. We were a game away from the winner having two Yoggs, not just one, but two. And like, if we're in a world where maybe he wins because of the Yoggs, like, is it then a problem? Like, everyone's kind of looking at this from, like, a proactive point of view, where it's like, we can all kind of agree this is a bad thing long term. We don't need to wait for a guy to get double pyroblasted to realize that this is a problem and can be a problem. Has a ridiculous Yogg happened yet where it decided the game completely? Sort of.
I mean anytime
over the weekend... The Naaman versus Ekop match. Naaman's went like Call of the Wild, Ball of Spiders, Soul of the Forest.
Soul of the Forest.
Double Soul of the Forest. Yeah. Why not? And you know, Ekop's best response was to then play the Yogg of his own, which then sucked.
Yeah. Of course.
When that's a match of Hearthstone, and if Blizzard wants there to be like analysis to be had, or like wants to have like an analyst desk or something, like, What can you even say about that? There's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, he casted his Yogg. It was probably the right play, but maybe not. Who knows? It worked out really well. He won.
Yeah.
And that is not good for the game. And it's fun for the wacky side of things, but I think Yogg is maybe the first real time that Blizzard missed the mark a little.
I think.
On the wacky card.
Well... Yogg's, like, really fun for the casual players. Like,
yeah.
I have a lot of fun playing Yogg. Yeah. I think a tournament setting, this may be the one card that they should be like, you know what, let's just not let this tournament play. Yeah, like, that's a simple solution. And then all the casual players are happy. All the competitive players are happy. Who's really
I think I think they have kind of this... It just feels like...
They really don't want to ban any cards.
They won't say that, but I can guarantee you they really don't want to ban something. And part of it is like you're also kind of just admitting you screwed up. You're like, well, guys, we can't really remedy this. We're just going to force our hand. It's banned.
Everyone will be happy. The casual players will be happy.
It'll create a little bit of controversy at first. There'll be a thread on Reddit. And then eventually everyone's going to come to the realization that they'll be like, this doesn't really hurt us.
Yeah, we can still play Yogg.
And they'll be like, and I mean, I guess the players are happy. Huh, I guess I'll keep watching Hearthstone anyway.
Yeah.
And like,
the weird thing is, do you play it then on ladders still? Like if it's banned, like ladders qualification for tournaments.
That's kind of where the dilemma comes in is like you want the game to be the same on ladder and in tournaments.
Well, what if they did change the card in a way that's along the lines of limiting how many spells are casted? Because I think the more casts that are the more Yogg casts, the better the percentage gets in where the outcome is actually positive for the person casting it, right? Or the person playing Yogg.
Well, that's the point, right? Because you want to be able to have the player be able to control it to some extent, right? So they cast a lot of spells, they build a deck with a lot of spells.
Sure.
Synergy for Yogg, they play Yogg, it's more positive. So
I mean, you could word it in the form it's like every two spells you cast, you know, Yogg gets a spell cast. You know, you could probably figure some way of wording it, but do you think that would still matter? I mean, if the RNG basically went down by a little bit, you know, and where Yogg was 50-50, you know, right now it's definitely not 50-50 in terms of the results for each, you know, each of the players.
I can imagine a lot of less players playing it if it's more 50-50.
Yeah,
for sure. Being, you know, 60-40,
Yogg is just impossible to balance, like...
Yeah. They, every time they add any cards to the game, it's going to be like, well, did this break Yogg?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's at a point where if your deck runs a lot of spells, which Token Druid just does, you probably want
there's a
Yogg.
Lot of decks that just run. I mean, Yogg, you can make an argument just for adding in any deck.
Right.
I've heard a lot of people in open tournaments that just are playing, like, Patron Warrior with Yogg, or just any deck
that spells like a free card. Yeah, I mean... You get a chance of possibly winning games that you had no business winning. That's essentially what it is, right?
People love it, man. They love just even in tournaments, they love just playing against like whoever they play against and just trying to high roll them with Yogg. It's a blast for people.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see, another question. So Groin Rude asks, thoughts on OTK Warrior and how to play against it? We actually were talking about this, I think before the show. So it's a good question for sure. OTK Warrior, we're starting to see on the ladder. I mean, I definitely see on the ladder. Not as much as Dragon Warrior and C'Thun Warrior, but definitely see it pop up. And when it does, I'm very happy I'm playing my Shaman. That's all my control Shaman a lot of times. But what are your thoughts on OTK Warrior?
I don't think the deck's very good. I think it's kind of one of the weaker. I think it is the weakest Warrior deck. Aside from, I think it's weaker than Pirate Warrior. I think it's weaker than Pirate Warrior. But that's just because I think it's like not that great against any deck that has a lot of mid-range threats. And there's a lot of decks that have a lot of mid-range threats out there that can put enough pressure on it. And also, as soon as you start realizing people are running one Worgen, one charge, and the odds of them actually having the damage at a lot of points in time is pretty unlikely, and you just play hyper-aggressively knowing it's unlikely that they can kill you, a lot of the times you can rush them down in time. I've even, like, as Rogue, there's been situations where it's like, well, they played Emperor, and I'm like, well, if he has Worgen Charge, I'm dead anyway. All face. Just ignore the Emperor.
Yeah.
Like, those sort of situations arise, because then it's like, well, if his charge is bottom eight, I win. And sometimes it's bottom, or charge, or Worgen, or Rampage, or bottom eight, I win. And sometimes one of those three cards is the bottom eight, and get away with the win while ignoring Emperor. And
that's a good point.
Hit him in the face.
That is a lot of cards that have to be like
They run one ofs there to try and, you know, make the deck more fluid. That has a cost to it, and you can kind of abuse that cost a lot of times.
Yep. Chalky, what do you think?
I haven't played around with the deck enough to know. But I mean, it did really well when it first became a thing. Obviously part of that was because no one knew what they were up against. It's sort of going through its cycle as like new deck comes in, does really well. Everybody's like, wow, this is the new hot shit. And then everyone starts playing it and they're like, okay, you know, maybe the guy that got number one literally just got lucky. But I don't know. I think it'll find its way into tournaments. Like, it's got a niche and it's really good at what it does. It's just a matter of if that's as a strategy overall is going to be consistent enough, especially in like Conquest. It's kind of sketchy.
Yeah,
like in LHS, it makes a lot more sense.
You can bunk draw with that pretty easily. Like, if you have three 50-50 matchups with that deck, like, your 50-50 matchups is, like, your percent chance to high roll, right? So,
But still, like, you know, in any tournament format, whether it's LHS or it's Conquest, you still have so many better, good warriors to choose from. Would you choose this and not choose the others?
I don't know.
See that. It's crazy.
I'm not willing to say it's, like, that awful yet. I honestly think it's still being, like... I don't think the deck list can get much more optimal.
Yeah. It's not so much that it's awful as much as it's just not better than the other decks, and the other decks are
still better. Yeah. I don't know. I'll have to see. Like, this is really the first month it's been around, and, like, the last day of the month still hasn't happened. Like... I don't know. Maybe a lot of people do well with it on ladder. A lot of people just aren't playing it, like, because it's a hard deck to play. Like, yeah, you have to think a lot, and like a lot of ladder is kind of like people prefer to play
grind.
Until you get to the top 100, a lot of people prefer to play like easy decks and just like mindlessly grind it out.
Yeah.
It's just nicer. Like you can't focus fully for 80 games in a day. Like Life Coach will like say that, and everyone will tell you that. So it's like, if you're going to be playing 100 games in a day, you probably don't want to be playing War Games.
Life Coach is not playing 100 games in a day. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
He might get 50, and like, maybe 50 games in a day.
It's true. Like, you know, you're going to be exhausted of thinking, like, just no matter what deck you play after a while. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's a lot of people aren't playing it. The people that do, they had success at first, and now, honestly, they just aren't having that same success. So maybe it was a bit of a fluke. Yeah. I don't know. I'd say it's a deck worth watching, but would I bring it to a tournament if I had to play a tournament, you know, tomorrow? No.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to run the same course that Worgen Warriors always ran, because Worgen Warriors done this many times in the meta, actually.
Yeah.
This is a pattern. Every meta, there's always a pocket where people are like, Worgen Combo Warrior for a week, and then it's like, all right, well, never mind. And
yeah.
Yeah,
like I did the same thing. You got number one with Worgen Combo Warrior like last year, and then
it wasn't that much different than this one, to be honest. I mean, there's probably like about four or five different cards, but yeah, for the most part, it's the same. It hasn't changed like all the over all this time. So, so anyways, to play against it, yeah, just pressure it, or I mean, I just throw up taunts at the end of it, and that's actually enough too. It's usually a game break. A game winner.
You can pressure them in such a way without taunts first. So you hold back your taunt minions and put as much pressure as you can without playing your taunt minions, and then force them to have to execute something that doesn't have taunt. And then after you've exhausted both their executes, then you finally taunt up, because you don't need to taunt up until they have, like, you know, they've played Emperor and have 9 mana or something. Otherwise, because they can't kill you yet. So you just want to max pressure until then and just keep throwing stuff at their face.
Yep, exactly.
To like draw, obviously.
Okay, last question. This is, I guess, a question that we see from time to time. Julius Carlson, if you guys could change 3 cards so they're in the classic set, which ones would you pick? Thanks for the great show. 3 cards. So 3 cards to add to the classic set. So just to have forever. What cards would they be? There's something to choose for.
Let me open up the client and look at some
Hearthstone cards. Reno? I mean, I think I might just choose Reno.
No way.
You don't think so? Like, healing is always such a...
Reno.
Really? Healing is such an issue otherwise.
I hate Reno.
Actually, so it would make sense that you hate Reno, actually, now that I think about it.
I didn't hate him from, like, a style point of view. I hate the type of gameplay he creates. Like, it's very binary, like... The way you're supposed to play against Reno decks is disrespect every card they have, because they have an answer to everything. And that's the difference, is they have one answer to everything. Not two, one. Mm-hmm. So over half the time, they don't have it. So you're supposed to disrespect everything. You're supposed to disrespect Reno a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And if they have it, they win. And if they don't, they lose. And it's like, it's a very 50-50 deck, like, where half the time you draw your Reno and it's nuts, and the other half you don't. And your deck's literally an unoptimized deck. Like, so I don't like it from that point of view.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I throw it in there is just that, you know, Reno has made... I mean, you know, when Reno was introduced, right, in LOE, I mean, we saw the resurgence of control decks again. And whether it was, you know, because of very linear decks or whatnot, we at least saw that. And that's because healing is an issue in... various classes, right? And it's not very easy just to add those. It's not very easy to have a card that's so impactful from a heal standpoint that people are able to add it to their decks. And you know, a good example would be, like, I don't know, you know, we always talk about Control Hunter, right? Control Hunter, obviously there's no heals in Hunter. So fitting a heal, it better be some kind of amazing heal for one card, you know, just having that kind of value. Because I can't fit 2 heal cards in a Hunter deck. It's just too hard. So it's more along the lines of that is what I would say. But that's, you know, again, I that was like first thing that came to my head in the form of just impact to the game. Anything you guys think of?
Yeah, I got one. Okay, but we need to try and find 3.
All right. Maybe so my first is Lotheb for sure.
Bring it back, huh?
Okay. I feel like Lothem was incredibly hard.
Okay.
The main issue with it is just that it was like powerful. Like it's just a really strong body, even if you don't need the effect. Maybe it can be toned down to like a 4-5, but the effects, like the usage of the effect in pro play was really like, you have to know when to time it. It made it so you couldn't do things so freely. Like now, if you're playing against a deck and they don't run healings, like they're not warrior or priest or paladin, and your opponent's like 10 and you have 10 points of burn in hand, even if you can't cast it all, you're just like, lava burst your face, go. What's the counterplay? There just really isn't. So like for classes like Hunter without healing, you used to have Lotheb. And so like there was kind of this interesting dynamic where do you play Lotheb? Do you taunt up? Like you have to kind of make a read on your opponent's hand and how you want to play around it. It was kind of fit into every style of deck. It let you create turns where like basically it created a variable in planning where like, no, you can't just cast Brawl every time. Like maybe I'll Lotheb you. So maybe you have to not be as greedy with your spells.
Okay. A big play for Lothem also was, no, you can't force a nature savage roar me this turn. maybe you can do it next turn.
You can't fire blast me.
Exactly. Okay. That's a powerful card, man.
It's a really good card.
Yeah.
A lot of people had negative opinions of it, but I feel like, it was a powerful card that sometimes you slammed it on curve and it was just still really good and you didn't have to think about it. But a lot of times it was like, it was a card you had to plan around and account for.
It really helps those midrange decks and the aggro decks a lot. Like everyone's trying to like make control happen and Chucky's just like, no, yeah, no
fuck
control.
That shit. Fuck Reno. Fuck, and just bring back Lothem, dude.
Yeah. I like effects like that. When Lothem exists, you can make control cards more powerful, I think, because there's counterplay.
I mean, you can just stop all the control cards from ever being played and just punch them in the face. I think that's more the direction. Like, you're trying to argue the control side here, but secretly, you're just going to Lothem people and punch them in the face, right?
Well, I'm saying...
That sounds like Chaka to me, man.
When Lothem is a card you can play, you can print more powerful spells because there's actual counterplay to them available.
Okay.
Whereas right now, like...
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like if you print more powerful control stuff, like you can't go too over the top right now.
Well, I guess you could.
Yeah. Lothem was one of my favorite cards.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people's favorite cards.
It was so good. I remember back when like Zoo was first coming out and then like Lothem first got released. Lothem and Zoo. And
nobody wants to.
Nuts.
Nobody wants to put in like awful cards in the standard forever. Like, oh yeah, throw me a Steamweedle Sniper. I gotta have that guy forever. Like,
oh, well, of course,
who cares
of
about
course
him?
All right, so Firebat, like, how about you, man? Yeah, you've got.
I was gonna say Fiery Bat, but that's like troll. But because I love
Vayne
or anything.
Not Vayne or
but,
anything.
But the actual one I have is Sir Finley Murgleton.
Oh,
I'd like
yeah.
to see that be in the classic set forever. I think that actually creates a lot of interesting like hybrid decks and just weird things that you don't see like normally. Like it like brings out like Pirate Warrior. You know, we don't need another warrior archetype, but it like causes the ability for classes to go in different directions, which I think is really cool. Just different utilization.
It fixes
cards.
The restriction too that Hearthstone just at its core creates with these different classes, and it's been an issue with balancing. So I think, Sir Finley frees up a lot of things for the designers too. And it makes their life easier. At least, they always can say, hey, Sir Finley, you can actually put Sir Finley in your deck and, kind of mix it up in terms of changing around, your hero power. Like, again, trying to bring up Control Hunter again, if you want to change to, a priest or a warrior or what, more control oriented. Yeah, exactly, right? You can do so with Sir Finley, so yeah, I think that'd be great.
And the third one, you got one?
Well, we have three, but we can do more.
We only have two, though.
Reno, Finley, and...
Oh, yours was Reno.
Yeah. We could do one more, though.
Yeah.
All right, bonus. One that all of us can agree on here.
Oh, that's gonna be tough.
Gosh. Should it be just neutral card?
Yeah, I mean, neutral is like, yeah, it's almost it like makes it has the most sense. It makes the most sense because it's like if you pick a card from a class, it's kind of unfair to the other class. It's like, it's so ridiculous to think like, oh yeah, just give Dark Bomb to Warlocks forever. It's like, well, obviously you'd have to give other classes compensation right. as well.
Yeah. Let's see. What's a...
I mean, it doesn't make much sense to me to have Old Murkai not be a thing when all the Murlocs are in the base set. Now, I think the literal reason is because Anyfin was too strong as a deck.
But like Anyfin wasn't a good deck.
Well, in standard, like...
Yeah, I guess it could be in
it's
standard.
Good. Like, it would be good in standard.
I'm pretty sure. I don't have, like, a quote from Blizzard on this. I think the reason they decided to rotate out the promo set was because...
Of just the charge.
Anyfin can happen. It was too powerful. And they hate those types of decks. They don't like that. Like, it's a fun deck. It's based on, like, a fun concept, which is, like, Murlocs just murdering you, but...
You can't stop it. That
OTK style, it's uninteractive, yeah.
Yeah, you can't
again,
stop.
Again, Lothan.
Yeah, yeah, okay, that's true. That would stop at least one iteration of that combo. But
I also think, like, besides bringing back Lothan, I'd really like to see more interaction with spell cards come into play. Like, the Trogs aren't doing it for me. The Stone Splinter Trog.
Yeah, those are pretty terrible ways to interact with spells. Play a subpar minion.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, we see a little bit with at least Shaman just overloaded, but that's not just spell. That's more overload than anything else.
You just say Bog Creeper should be forever. Bog just Creeper? Remember Frodan.
Yeah, Frodan. Bog Champ, baby. Bog Champ. Any giant card? Let me see. I'm trying to think of the legendary.
Yeah, I'm looking at all the legendaries. I'm not really
They're not
seeing
that
any.
Great, actually. None of them are. I mean, I think Nazoth would be too powerful. Like it's so design restricting that card.
Yeah.
Cthune,
yeah.
Not.
I don't see any legendaries really that I see that as like, oh yeah, this should be in the game forever.
Yeah.
Like none of them seem like so defining that they need to stay.
What about any
Emperor? Be kind of cool.
Which one, Emperor? Emperor Thorzan is.
And there's Justicar to think about, but Justicar. I don't want to see Tank up anymore.
When Emperor goes away, Blizzard has to like find new ways to make combo stuff work.
Yeah, otherwise the game's gonna be too boring. You just cut out a third of the deck archetypes right there.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Justicar. I know you hate Tank up, but
oh yeah, it's so boring though. We don't.
But it's
need
a nice
main.
It's a nice name. But
what's Twitch chat gonna do?
Oh man.
Like Justicar sees play in what? Warrior and Paladin occasionally?
Occasionally.
Priest
Paladin.
If it was a
Oh Priest for sure. Yeah. Priest.
Oh, priest nobody plays that.
And then it's awful in Warlock, awful in Shaman, awful in Hunter.
It's literally made for Warrior and
It's
Warrior.
Only played in like half the glasses, and it's only good in one.
Okay,
so.
All right, yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I wanna know, was there a point in testing where a Blizzard employee, like they were internally testing the cards, and 100 games in or so, just throws his hands up. He's like, "No, I'm sick of this 100 4 damage hero power. We need to nerf this. Justicar cannot let 100 deal." 4.
I think it was more just like. A table discussion. They're sitting around and they're like, "All right, so Justicar will make Priest do 4. It'll make Warrior do 4. It'll make Hunter do 4." And it was like 3. Let's go with 3.
Let's go with 3.
Let's go with 3.
Let's go with 3.
Well,
people are gonna be upset. Whoa. Nobody likes Hunter.
Yeah, but then you bring up the Shaman. Was it originally 2 totems, and then it ended up being you can pick what you still get a totem, but you get to pick what totem you want.
What? Honestly, it's hilarious to read like general discussion forum comments about whenever Blizzard reveals a new card. They think everything is broken.
Yeah.
Like just every card that ever gets released by Blizzard is just they screwed the game up. It's all over. The game's dead. Everything's going downhill. Steamwheel Sniper is the most broken card in the game.
Steamwheel.
Like that's a real like they have
I don't remember this, really? I don't even.
Okay, what was the one card that everyone blew up about that just ended up being awful? I will find the Reddit thread. Wait, I gotta figure out
which release.
Card it was.
Let's talk about which release. Trogzor, come on, that's the easiest one. Trogzor was by far.
It was like a card that was objectively like any actual player could tell you this is not going to be like a played card. What was it?
So players were right about their assessment, but the community was wrong. Is that what you're saying? Or
pretty much, yeah. Oh, Feign Death, dude. Feign Death.
What? People thought that was good?
Really?
Yes. I will find the thread.
Who thought that was good?
Reddit blew up because remember Hunter, specifically Undertaker Hunter, was really oppressive.
Okay.
Remember?
Yeah.
And everyone freaked out at the concept of like they're buffing Death Rattle Hunter. And it's like, well, no, guys, this card kind of sucks. But like everyone lost their shit over Feign Death.
Wow, I don't even remember that.
The card's just trash.
Okay. It's awful, yeah. It never saw play.
It was bad.
I did see play actually in like those weird.
I tried that deck, but it's. I mean, we see the princess. It's kind of Feign Deathy, and it has no play. Like I never hit anything with that stupid card. It's like maybe I'll get a wolf every once in a while, but never the dream with Sylvanas or Savannah. I mean,
it's a bad five drop.
I think this one might be kind of. This one might not be an obvious one, but I feel like heal is something that, but this is a specific class. I still like Helazeal. I think Helazeal isn't as crazy, you know, as people think yet. But I think if you took out heal waves, you could be okay. Like heal wave could go away, I think for Shaman, and you just kept Helazeal there, and there's still just that built-in heal for Shaman, and it's a good amount too.
All
right. Yeah, Zeal's just really cool.
Yeah.
Let me read you guys off some comments from when this card revealed.
Oh, God. Chucky's like on a mission here.
So, basically, like, Blizzard got so much shit for this.
Last thing.
Top comment. Maybe this will bring back Death Rattle Hunter. Finally, a Hunter buff. Thanks, Blizzard. Now I can finally play my poor Death Rattle Hunter. Bring out your dead. Yeah, so basically, everybody just gave Blizzard a lot of shit because it was a buff. To the best deck in the game, which then got nerfed a month later, and Feign Death was never ever good.
Okay, well, that's
nobody.
None of the players
thought Feign Death was.
Yeah, nobody thought Feign Death was actually.
I'll find somebody that did. I bet Raynad did.
It's an interesting card, but yeah, it never made it. Maybe if it was one mana, maybe you could have pulled it off, but.
Yeah, you could pull it off for 1 minute for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyways, everybody, we should wrap up the show. We've gone over 2 hours now, so this has been a lot of fun. Thanks, everybody, for writing in your questions, and as always, lots of good ones. and we had a long discussion, actually, based on a few of these. But Chalky, Firebat, lots of fun, man. Thanks for coming on the show today, and hope you guys had a good time. Chalky, want to do some shout-outs and maybe let folks know where they can find you?
Yeah, I got a call as you said that.
What's your phone number, man?
Yeah, maybe Firebat can go first.
Why don't you go first, Firebat? Yeah.
Shout-out to Cloud9. They're my team.
Yeah.
Shout-out to Temple Storm. They're like running the show on their channel, right? So, love. Good to go.
Yes. All right. Okay. Chalky, phone stopped ringing. Actually, are you streaming, Firebat? You still streaming? Have you started up a stream schedule again?
I haven't started up a schedule, but I streamed today and yesterday both at like 4 a.m. my time just because I can't sleep. So it's like, might as well stream.
Yeah. You can find him at twitch.tv/Firebat. It's Firebat HS or Firebat?
Firebat. It's just Firebat. All of my stuff got changed to just Firebat.
Yeah,
now, so.
That's a good man.
He's a cool kid now.
Yeah, he's a cool kid. Yeah. Not the Chalky HS over here, you know.
I still got the underscore.
You can never get out of Hearthstone now that you have the underscore.
I'm stuck.
Well, eventually you can get the Chalky. You probably just need to buy it from somebody. Someone has Chalky.
Squatters, man.
Buy it?
Damn squatters.
Yeah, that's how I was able to get Firebat. Like someone was just camping on Firebat.
How much you pay? I don't know if it, how much you pay, dude?
I didn't pay for it. Like Cloud9 handled everything.
The guy with at Chalky he's just been AFK since 2008.
After a certain amount of time, you can actually get that. Yeah, you can make them leave it.
Seems good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you might want to get on that before someone that's listening to the show goes and takes Chalky and tries to sell it to you.
No kidding, man. Put some $5.
Please, no. No stealer, you know. But yeah, shout outs to my non-existent team right now. This could be, you know, this is that part of the show where I give you a little shout out. If you were sponsoring me, future team, you need not apply. But yeah, thanks guys for having me on. It was a fun time. And I'll talk to you guys later.
Awesome. Teams, come on. This guy, I can't believe he's not sponsored yet. This is crazy, actually. yeah, that's amazing. But yeah, just a big thanks to both of you guys for coming on the show. And yeah, it's always a lot of fun with you guys. So really, really happy that you guys were able to do it today. And for those of you, I guess, looking for some more shows, I do another show tomorrow that's going to be, it's a new show that we debuted last week called Spoiler Alerts that I do with Elheim and Eat My Diction. So you can check that out. We're going to be talking about Stranger Things. And it'll be on Elheim's channel tomorrow at 1, so twitch.tv/Elheim. You can find all my stuff at ChamMV, so Twitch, ChamMV, Twitter, ChamMV, YouTube, ChamMV. And the VODs for this will be up shortly after the show, probably about an hour or so. Audios will be up tomorrow, as usual. For those of you that get the direct feed, it'll be up tonight, but most of you on iTunes and everything else, it'll be tomorrow. And that's going to be it. Oh, by the way, next week, guys, we're not going to have a show. I'm going to be out, actually, family vacation, which is long overdue. So we'll have to continue 2 weeks after that. We'll get a chance to talk. We'll let the announcement simmer for like a good week, and then we'll be able to talk about, like, you know, what the new cards and what everything is, well, what's in store for us. But until then, oh, and lastly, big shout out to Tempestor for sponsoring the show and all their sponsors, E2A, Twitch, and Curse. Until next time, guys, for Chalky, Firebat, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next time. Later.